ജയം വിഷുപാല പരമഹംസ പരിപ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹർഷിയിൽ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷുപാല പരമഹംസ പരിപ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹർഷിയിൽ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹു ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസ് സാധികവര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ഡ രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദ സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദ സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദ സിമ്പിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷുപദായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവി ഉഗ്രവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ
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 ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയാ ചക്ഷുരുന്മീലിതാം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമഃ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം തദാദി സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുധാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാശ ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാൻവിതം സജീവം സദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം രാധാകൃഷ്ണപദാം സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാന്വിതാംശ്ച നമോ വിഷ്ണുപരായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണി നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി നാമിനേ ശ്രീവർഷഭാനുവി ദേവി ദൈതായ കൃപാബ്ദയേ കൃഷ്ണ സംബന്ധ വിജ്ഞാനം ദായിനേ പ്രഭവേ നമ മാധുര്യോജ്ജല പ്രേമാദ്യ ശ്രീരൂപാനുഗഭക്തിദ ശ്രീഗൗരകരുണാശക്തി വിഗ്രഹായ നമോസ്തുതേ നമസ്തേ ഗൗരവാണി ശ്രീമൂർത്തയേ ദിനധാരിണി രൂപാനുഗവിരുദ്ധാവ സിദ്ധാന്തധ്വന്തഹാരിണി നമോ ഗൗരേഷോരായ സാക്ഷാത് വൈരാഗ്യമൂർത്തയേ പ്രലംബനസാംബോധേ പാദാംബുജായതേ നമ നമോ ഭക്തിവിനോദായ സച്ചിദാനന്ദനാമിനേ ഗൗരശക്തിസ്വരൂപായ രൂപലോകവരായതേ ഗൗരാവിർഭവഭൂമിസ്ത്വം നിർദ്ദേഷ്ടാസ ജനപ്രിയ വൈഷ്ണവാസവഭൗമശ്രീ ജഗന്നാഥായതേ നമ പഞ്ചകൽപ്പതരുഭ്യാശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യേവ ച പതിതാനാം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ നമോ മഹാവദന്യായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രേമ പ്രദായതേ കൃഷ്ണായ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യനാമ്നേ ഗൗരത്വശേ നമഃ പഞ്ചതത്വാത്മകം കൃഷ്ണം ഭക്തരൂപസ്വരൂപകം ഭക്താവതാരം ഭക്താഖ്യം നമാമി ഭക്തശാസ്ത്രീയം ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ ജയതാം സുരതോമാംഗോ മമന്ദമദേർഗതി മത്സർവസവദാംഭോജോ രാധാമദനമോഹനം ദിവ്യവൃന്ദാരണ്യകൽപദ്രുമാദ ശ്രീമന്ദരത്നാകരസിംഹാസനസ്ഥോ ശിശിരാധാശീലഗോവിന്ദദേവോ പ്രശാലിപി സേവ്യമാനോ സ്മരാമി ശ്രീമന്ദ്രാസനസാരംഭി വംശീഗുണതടസ്ഥിത കർഷന്മനുസ്വനേർഗോപേർഗോവിനാഥാശ്രീയേസ്തുന തഥകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീരാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനസുദേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ ಓಂ ಪಾಥಾಯ ಪ್ರತಿಬೋಧಿನಾಂ ಭಗವದಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣೇನ ಸ್ವಯಂ ವ್ಯಾಸೇನ ಗ್ರನಿದಾಂ ಪುರಾಣ ಮುನಿನಾಂ ವಂದೇ ಮಹಾಭಾರತಂ ಅದ್ವೈತಾಮೃತವರ್ಷಿಣೀಂ ಭಗವದೀಮಷ್ಟಾದಶಾಧ್ಯಾಯಿನೀಂ ಅಂಬ ತ್ವಾಮನುಸಂದದಾಮಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತೇ ಭವದ್ವೇಷಿಣೀಂ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ವ್ಯಾಸ ವಿಶಾಲಬುದ್ಧೇ ಕುಲಾರವಿಂದಾಯ ತವತ್ರ ನೇತ್ರ ಯೇನ ತ್ವಯಾ ಭಾರತ ತೈಲಪೂರ್ಣ ಪ್ರಜ್ವಾಲಿತೋ ಜ್ಞಾನಮಯ ಪ್ರದೀಪ ಪ್ರಪಂಚ ಪಾರಿಜಾತಾಯ ಸ್ತೋತ್ರ ವೇತ್ರೈಕವಾಣಯೇ ಜ್ಞಾನಮುದ್ರಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಗೀತಾಮೃತ ದುಹೇ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವಉಪನಿಷದೋ ಗಾವೋ ದುಗ್ಧಾ ಗೋಪಾಲನಂದನ ಪಾಥೋ ವತ್ಸ ಸುಧೀರ್ಭೋಕ್ತಾ ದುಗ್ಧಂ ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಮಹ ವಸುದೇವಸುತಂ ದೇವಂ ಕಂಸಚ್ಚಾನೂರವರ್ಧನಂ ದೇವಕೀ ಪರಮಾನಂದಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ವಂದೇ ಜಗದ್ಗುರುಂ ವಿಶ್ವದ್ರೋಣದಗಾಜಯದ್ರದಜಲ ಗಾಂಧಾರ ನೀಲೋಲ್ಪಲ ಶಲ್ಯದ್ರಾಹವದೀ ಕೃಪೇಣ ವಹನಿ ಕರ್ಣೇನ ವೇಳಾಕುಲ ಅಶ್ವತ್ಥಾಮಾ ವಿಕರ್ಣ ಘೋರಮಗರ ದುರ್ಯೋಧನಾವರ್ತಿನಿ ಸೋತೀರ್ಣ ಖಲು ಪಾಂಡವೈರಣ ನದೀ ಕೈವರ್ತಕ ಕೇಶವ ಪಾರಾಶಲ್ಯವಜಸ್ವರೋಜಮಲಂ ಹಿತಾರ್ಥಗಂಧೋಲ್ಕಟಂ ನಾನಾಧ್ಯಾನ ಕೇಸರಂ ಹರಿಕಥಾ ಸಂಬೋಧನಾಬೋಧಿತಂ ಲೋಹೇ ಸಜ್ಜನ ಶಲ್ಪದೈರಹರಹ ಪೇದೀಯಮಾನಂ ಮುದಾ ಭೂಯಾದ್ ಭಾರತ ಭಂಗಜ ಕಲಿಮಲ ಪ್ರಧ್ವಂಸಿನ ಶ್ರೇಯಸೇ ಮೂಗಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗುಂ ಲಂಘಯದೇ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯಲ್ಕೃಪಾದಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ ಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮಾವರುಣೇಂದ್ರ ರುದ್ರಮರುದಸ್ತ್ವನ್ವಂದಿ ದಿವ್ಯೈಸ್ತವೈರ್ ವೇದೈ ಸಾಂಗಪದೈರ್ ಕ್ರಮ ಉಪನಿಷದೈರ್ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಸಾಮಗಾಃ ಧ್ಯಾನಾವಸ್ಥಿತ ತದ್ಗತೇನ ಮನಸಾ ಪಶ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಯೋಗಿನೋ ಯಸ್ಯಾಂತಂ ನ ವಿದುಸುರಾಸುರಗಣೈ ದೇವಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ನಮಃ. ಸೊ today we will begin the 18th chapter, the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. As we concluded our last class, Krishna has given an introduction in the last verses to the next chapter. As usual, what Krishna has done, that you can see those verses at the end, what we spoke about, the last few verses, Om Tat Sat. Krishna is saying that those verses, particularly Sadbhave Sadhubhavescha Sadityedat Prayujyate, from that is verse number 26 and 27. And also, before that, Krishna said, 23rd verse, Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho Brahmanas Trivithas Mrudam Brahmanas Tena Vedescha Yajnyescha Vihidampara. So, from then onwards, that 23, 24, 25, and 26, 27, 28, they're all an introduction to the next chapter, the 18th chapter.
another thing is that those verses, although we have spoken about that, I know it must have probably not got in very well. I can understand that, because that verses are for realizations. It's not for intellectualization, or you can't explain it properly. When Krishna is saying Om Tat Sat in meditation, you can see the verse itself. It's meant for realization. Only when you realize it, you can accept that. Till that time, it will remain as a mystery. They are all mystery verses, all what Krishna has spoken there. So, that means he mentioned about the Tadvastu, Sadvastu, and as though all of them as an expansion of the word pranamam, Om. And so, Krishna says, afterwards in the 25th verse, he said, that to understand that verse better, that is in the 25th verse, you will notice, Krishna said there that taditin abhisandhaya bhalam yajna tapakriyaha dana kriyascha vividha kriyande mokshagangshibhi. That is that verse we were talking about. He said, Krishna is saying to us that if you haven't understood those verses, that is 23 and 24, where he talked about Om Tat Sat, iri nirdesho brahmana travidas pradam, brahmanasthene vedascha yajnascha vividha pura. Those verses are purely the language of the Vedam, directly from the Vedic language. Tasmado ityudahritya yajna dana tapakriya pravartande vidhanoktam sadanam brahmavadinam. So, according to the Shastram, three things Krishna mentions. Now give importance out of the five. Five things are devada, aharam, yajnam, danam, tapas. Isn't it? Total five. Out of that, aharam and devada, that is within our own control. Whereas the other three, yajnam, danam, tapas, Krishna is saying here, it should be performed with this understanding that the Om Tat Sat. And but Krishna is saying that tasmat Om iti udahritya yajna dana tapakriya. Yajna dana and tapas should be executed with this Om Tat Sat. Pravartande vidhanavata sadam brahmavadinam. And then after that he mentioned there in the next verse taditya abhisandhayam. So what he is saying there is that without expectation of any results, without expectation of any results, then that is what is meaning by that. That means these three things, yajnam, dhanam, tapas, these three should be performed without expectation of any results from that. That means you can't do it with any sankalpam inside the mind. Inside the mind. If it is done like that, Krishna is saying, you will get purified. Otherwise not. If it's done with the desires inside, then it won't. You won't get purified. You will remain as we are. But yajnam, dhanam, tapas. These three things, if without any motive, without any expectations, if it is done, you will get purified. Krishna is saying to us. Chitta-shuddhi. Chitta-shuddhi will happen. Therefore, he mentions in that verse, you can see that kriyande moksha-kankshibhi. So, those who are looking for liberation, freedom from this material body, once for all, Krishna is saying, phalam yajna-dana tapakriya dana kriyascha vivida kriyande moksha-kankshibhi. It has to be executed without any kind of expectations from that. Any motive behind it, or expiration in itself. So that is why in the next verse Krishna mentioned also sadbhavi sadubhavascha, isn't it? Sadubhavascha, that verse. So he mentions these thing verses. Krishna is saying there that anything that will lead finally, eventually, for liberation or knowledge of the self or self-realization, if all that is called sadhubhava, sadbhavi sadhubhavescha. Sadhubhava means, say for example, if you are doing deity worship, puja, deity worship is puja, or charity, dhanam, or any good things in life, studying shastram, sadgrantham, padhanam, all that is sadhubhav. That's all considered to be sadhubhav. It will all help you for sadhubhav, Krishna saying. Sadhubhav will lead to sadhubhav. Sadhubhav is sadhubhavishya, Krishna saying. Therefore, but both are brahmam, Krishna is saying. Sadhubhavam is brahmam, sadhubhavam is also brahmam. And jnani who has realized that brahmam, all this is covered in that word sattva. So wherever anything that represents relationship with the Vedika karmam, this sat shabdham is used, always used. After that, Krishna said in the 27th verse, Yajna tamasidhaneja sadhiti chochade karma jayvam tartiyam sadityam abhidiyade. Krishna saying, yajnam dhabasa dhanam, all the taneja sadhihi dhanam, all those things should not be done once in a way. It's not for performing once in a way. Instead, regularly, that should become the pattern of life. That's what's expected. It has to become our pattern of life. Constantly absorbed in this yajnam dhanam tapasa. Yajnam dhanam tapasa all the time. A steadiness in that. To become steady in that process. Not to do once and leave it. And I'll do after 20 years later. No. So, if it is happening in a person's life, yajnam dhanam tapasa regularly all the time, then it is sattva. It is called sattva. So this yajnam dhanam tapasa, all these things, if that develops in a person's life, yajnam dhanam and tapasa, which we have discussed what that means, isn't it? So you have to keep that in mind. What is yajnam, what is dhanam, what is tapasa? All in the mode of goodness. Not in the Rajasam Tamasam. If it is done in Rajasam Tamasam, waste of time. Only if it is done in the Satugunam, Krishna is saying here, in due course of time, all his actions and even what we do in our life to maintain this body, all of that, it will come into a dharmam. It will become a dharmam in one's life. If yajnam dhanam tapasa, if it is performed in sattva-gunam, and if he gets a steadiness in that, whatever he does will be a dharma. Whatever he does will be dharma. That does not matter what it is, whether it is agriculture, or whether it is any Vedic karma, or business, whatever it is, or whatever he does in his life, all actions, everything, in behind all that, this yajnam dhanam tapasya will stabilize his life. How does it stabilize? It makes his life steady in one way. That means that he has learned how to switch the whole life as a surrender to Krishna. As a surrender and service to Krishna. And if it is done like that, that will all become sattva, Krishna is saying. That is what that verse is saying. See that? Yajnai tapasi dhanecham sad iti chochyate. See, yajnam tapasya dhanam, all that will become steady, and sthiti sad iti chochyate. It will become sad. Yajnya karmani chaya sthiti, tapasya chaya sthiti, dhani chaya sthiti, sa chasa iti uchyate. Vidvadbhi karma cha eva tadarthiyam adhava yasya abhidhanatrayam prakritam. Tadarthiyam yajnadana tapo arthiyam ishwarathiyam idi edat. So, everything, the key, Krishna points out there, the key factor behind it is this offering everything to Krishna, which is the greatest thing to be done. That means, like Narada Maharshi explained in the 7th canto, isn't it? Dravyadvaidam, Kriyadvaidam, Bhavadvaidam. In all the three planes, with the body, whatever that's happening is being done, it's Krishna is doing through this body. To accept it that way. Not coming from our ego. Rather, it is Krishna's decision that I have to do this action through this body. Similarly, all what we have to do, vyavaharam within this world, knowing very well that it is Krishna's property, it is being handled in that way, that is the dravyadvaitam. All dravyam belongs to Krishna, nothing belongs to us. Kriyadvaitam. Bhavadvaitam means in all situations, any actions comes through this body, it does not create any karmavasana inside, in such a way that karmam through flow through this body. So these three things, everything in that way, if it is done, even spiritual sadhana, not only material activities, even spiritual sadhana. If I am chanting Hare Krishna, I have to have that consciousness always, Krishna is chanting, through this body it's happening. Krishna is doing the deity worship. Krishna is allowing me to speak through Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam. Krishna is doing everything, I am just an instrument. This realization must happen. Then only it becomes what Krishna is saying here, yatnyam. It becomes a yatnyam. So, unfortunately we will do all these things with pride, isn't it? I am doing this. That is what Krishna is. That's why Krishna says earlier, yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat johosi, yat asiyal, yat tapasyasi kaundeya, tal kurusham adarpanam. Earlier he mentioned that, I think in the 4th or 5th chapter, he mentions there. So, if it is done like that, Krishna is saying, then it is surrender. It is surrender to Krishna. And he also mentions there, sometimes you can see in spiritual life also, we will think like this, that, today I felt very good, I was feeling happy in spiritual life, I was chanting my rounds peacefully, I was reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Another day, I feel different. I feel different from that. So, why is that happen? Why did that happen? That is what Krishna is explaining here. So, today Krishna has given you that consciousness to enjoy spiritual life. Krishna may not give it to you tomorrow. Today you are able to chant, but tomorrow you are not able to chant. Something happens, you didn't get the mood to chant. Which means that Sattugunam didn't come at that time. Sattugunam didn't come. So, that is why Krishna is saying that how to go beyond the three modes. Yat tapasyasi kaundeya, Krishna says there. If you remember that word? Yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat juhosi, the dasiyal, yat tapasyasi. So even the tapasya also, sikondeya tal kurushama darpanam. It should be offered to me, Krishna says. Offering to me means what we have studied, that famous verse. Kayena vaja manasendriyarva buddhyalpanava prakrute subhaval karomi adyat sagalam parasmai narayanayadi samarpayami. That's what it is. That's the same thing in the Bhagavadam, but in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has put it like this. So, yat tapasyasi, even what is done like that should not be imposed on the self. Should not be imposed on the self. And if you impose it on the self, then you will become the owner of the person who is doing the tapasya. You are doing the tapasya then. Is it not? And that means you are doing the yajnam. You are doing the tapasya. You are doing the dhanam. That is not in sattugunam. And when you have experienced the samadhi also, you will see that you are experiencing the samadhi. In that case, what will happen? That karma, that yajnam, that dhanam all become asuram, demoniac. It become asuram. It's a very fine line of division there. That the moment I think and I impose all these things on the self, that I am doing it, I am doing everything, I am doing the yajnam, I am doing the dhanam, I am doing the tapasya. In that way, if I continue doing this, eventually it will become in such a way that karmam or jnanam or tapasya will all become asuram. Asuram means demoniac. Demoniac. Because in there, Hiranyakashipu's nature will develop in me. If I do it that way, Hiranyakashipu's nature will develop in me. Or Ravana's nature will develop inside me. In order that not to happen, Krishna is saying, so that such a thing should not happen, therefore, yajnam, dhanam, tapasya, in all these things should be talkurushama darpanam. It should be offered to Krishna. Should be offered to Krishna. That means, only with that understanding, if we do our sadhana, the sadhana is success. But if I am thinking, though, I have to do my 16 rounds,
from the morning and I am thinking, I am the doer. If that way, if I do it, that will not purify me. That is what Krishna is pointing out here. The subtle side of that, he is saying here, the Bhagavad Arpanam, he mentions this in many places in different ways. If you look into 7th chapter, I think, he mentions that, the beginning of the chapter itself, he says, Yogam Yunjan Madhashraya. Madhashraya, he's saying. What is that? My Asakta Manapartha Yogam Yunjan Madhashraya. The secret of all this thing is this realization that Krishna is doing that. How many rounds we have done and what all big things we have done is not important. This surrender side of it is more important than how many big things you have done in this world. This is the important message. My asakta manapartha yogam yunjan madashraya is saying, you do everything but with this understanding that it is happening through my body, it's happening through me, this karma. That way you don't identify or you don't take the ownership of the karma that has happened through us. That will remain, that will purify us, in other words. That's the only thing that will purify us. Instead, if I think that I have done all these big projects and so many things I have done for Krishna, and if I wander around in that mode, I will not move one inch further in spiritual life. This is a very important warning from Krishna's side. That only if you recognize that Krishna is allowing me to do this, it's happening through me, when it happens, you have to continuously acknowledge that. That Krishna is behind the folds operating there. Krishna is doing it, but it so happened it comes through me. And it's so similarly charity, when it's given, it is Krishna's wealth that it is. Krishna has left it with me to hand it over to somebody. That's all. Nothing more than that. Yajnam Dhanam. Similarly, all the austerities also, tapas also in the same way. So that is the most important message coming out from there, that everything, if it is executed in that way, Krishna says it will purify us. We will get purified, and that means the knowledge of the self will develop within. Otherwise it won't happen. This is the message coming from there. Another person, Krishna says in another chapter, Jaramarana Mokshaya Mama Ashrate Dandiye Te Brahma Tadvido Krishnam Adhyalpam Karmajahilam. Another place, Krishna saying exactly the same thing. This is meant for those who wants to free themselves from the cycle of birth and death. Jaramarana Mokshaya. From the old age and death. If you want to escape from that, Krishna is saying, Jaramarana Mokshaya Mama Ashrite Yatandiye. Take my shelter first and then do everything else. So that taking shelter is more important than what all things what you have done in this world. It's a very subtle things. We won't understand this when you read Bhagavad Gita. If you don't get these things right, then the whole message will get lost in the process. That I am the doer, that has to go out from inside. It's all happening through this body, through this mind. So having said that, Krishna is saying here if you do it, that in yajnam dhanam tapasya, everything in this consciousness, then it will purify us. Nothing should be given up, Krishna is saying. Nothing should be given up. Krishna is saying here, yo dhana tapaschaiva. In the next chapter, that is what Krishna is going to discuss this. If you look into the next chapter, you will see 5th and 6th verse. Look at that, what Krishna is saying about, again coming back to this yajnam and dhanam. 5th and 6th verses, where he says that, yajnya dhana tapakarmam natyajyam karyamevatad. Never to be given up yajnam dhanam tapasya. Again he is warning us. Yajnyo dhanam tapascheiva pavanani manishinam. See that? Yajnyam dhanam tapasya. These three things, pavanani manishinam. That is performed, that it is meant for purification. Which one? Yajnyam dhanam tapasya. So he has said this in the last verse, 27th verse in the 17th chapter. He said, ये तपसि दानेजा स्थिति सत इति चोच्यते कर्मचैव तदर्थियं सदित्ये वाभिधीयते. He spoke that. And again, Krishna is coming back to the same yajnam dhanam tapasya again in the next chapter. And he says, യജ്ഞദാന തപകർമ്മം ന ത്യാജ്യം കാര്യമേവ തത് യജ്ഞോ ദാനം തപശ്ചൈവ പാവനാനി മനീഷിണാം. And in the next verse he is saying that edanya bitu karmani sangam tetva bhalani cha kartavyani dime partha nischitam madam uttamam. Again stressing that point once again, he is saying edanya bitu karmani sangam tetva bhalani cha kartavyani dime partha nischitam madam uttamam.
Nischitam madam uttamam.
So those two verses 18:5 and 18:6 is again stressing that same point what Krishna has spoken here. In the 18:5 and 18:6 he mentions that acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. They should never be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even the great souls. Even the great souls. And in the next verse he said that all these sacrifices should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. O son of Pritha, that is my final opinion. What should I say? Final opinion. So, Krishna never says you have to give it up. Never says you have to give it up. But this surrender is more important. Never to be given up, but it should always be done in a surrender understanding, surrender mode. Which means, he is saying here, without sangam. Sangam means attachment. That I am not the doer. I am not expecting anything from the results in that state. Everything should be offered to Krishna. And meditation or samadhi, even those spiritual activities, practices, even they have to be done in that way. So only then it has some spiritual benefit. Otherwise it will not work. This is Bhagavad Gita's clear verdict on that. Now you can see from this that how important it is to understand these things from Bhagavad Gita, because you can see the yoga institutes. Many yoga institutes in the modern days, yeah, they will tell you that you have to pay so much fee for this yoga process. And then they will say the kundalini will rise from Mooladharam to Sahasraram to the top, and we give you a guarantee that it will happen in that way. And this is all the jokes that's going on now, isn't it? So those who are doing these things, they are doing it as a business, is it not? They want to collect the money from the public and they fool them, saying like this. And the spiritual teachers also, they make all this kind of, openly, they make this guarantee, if you practice this yoga process for such and such a period, either a week, 1 month or whatever that is, people want it like that. All time bound and controlled by the, isn't it? So, and I will guarantee you that the kundalini will rise inside in the spine and go into the sahasraram. And they make this advertisement and collect the money from the public. And one person who joined that course and he paid all the money and did that for a month or something which was advertised, and he didn't have the result. So he filed a case against this yoga institute in the court, and court case is still going on. What do you think? That's how it is. People have become like that, is it not? It's all because of the same, and the case is still going on. Similarly, we promise people, I will take you back home, back to Godhead. If I don't go back to Godhead, which court shall I go to fight the case? Is it not? So this kind of spiritual life is no good. This is only this is not what Krishna is saying here in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying to us that you will have to do things the way Krishna has told us to do. That's the only way. That's why he kept repeating that Shastra Vidimul Sraja Vartade Kamara Karada. In the last chapter he mentioned, before he came to this chapter, isn't it?
And he also mentioned there in that verse, that last verse on the last chapter, that is the 16th chapter, he mentioned there that tasmat shastram pramanande karya karya vyavasthito karyam akaryam, you have to know only from the shastram, and Krishna won't agree with anything else. Only shastram you have to go with, nothing else. We can't take any advertisements and all the propaganda and preaching, all that is not the authority. Authority is shastram. Tasmat shastram pramanande karya karya vyavasthito, to know it properly, isn't it? So from here you can see that whatever rishis have spoken, that rishis way of doing things, the sages, the rishis, what we have done is we have completely missed the thoughts behind it. They gave us with an open heart and they told us that this is how you proceed in this path. Anything else if you do, you won't make it. It won't happen. Because they know, they are the personalities who have got it. Is it not? So you can't go against their words under any circumstances. If you do that, then it will not have the benefit of doing that. So there was one famous personality. He is no more now, but he was very philosophically inclined person. Krishnamurti, J. Krishnamurti is known. If you Google, you will see about him. He was part of the Theosophical Society and all that. He spoke about this in one instance. He said that all those which were preserved by the rishis as sacred are all vulgarized. That's what he said. That was his words about it. He says all those which were preserved by the rishis as sacred, we have vulgarized them. We made it third class in our dealings through that. So, just like he says there, you bring things into the open market and sell them in the street, you have started doing that with them. So, that is a warning. That is a warning. That if we do, it will lose its power, it will lose its effect and potency. What Krishna is expecting from all these things to happen. So all these things, yajnam, danam, tapasya, everything should be done with shraddha, with the shraddha. And a state has to come from that, by doing that in that particular way, a particular state has to come. And what Krishna calls it as a steadfastness, becoming steadfast in that, and able to offer that to Krishna without taking any ownership in that, or without expecting any results from that. That is that pure state, Krishna is saying here. That we are, first you have to become steadfast in doing things. That means throughout life, making it as a commitment to accept this principle of Bhagavad Gita. Yajnam, danam, tapasya, three things. So after that, first thing is to become steadfast in doing that. Secondly, able to offer everything to Krishna. As Krishna mentions in the Bhagavatam also, that kayena vacha manasendriyava. I have not done anything, everything Krishna is making me to do it, or Krishna is doing that. I'm chanting the holy name, actually Krishna is making me to chant the holy name, and I am chanting. Krishna is making me to chant. Krishna is giving me the meditation, dhyanam, and therefore meditation happens to me. Not that I sit and do the meditation. Meditation is given by Krishna, and Krishna creates that meditation inside us. This is called that arpanam. Tal kurushama darpanam, Krishna is saying, isn't it? That arpanam. So, karma chaiva tadarthiyam. And even this is in the spiritual side part of it. Apart from that, even our daily life has to run on this principle, on this understanding. Tadarthiyam. So, that same verse, kayena vacha manasendriyerva udhyalpanava prakrute subhava karodiyadit sakalam parasmai narayanayadi samarpayami. After saying that, Krishna concluded that chapter saying finally, ashraddhaya hudam dattam tapastaptam kritam chayad asadit ichyade partha machadat pretyano iha. So, Ashradaya Hudanatam. Krishna says, anything done as sacrifice, charity or penance, without faith in the Supreme, O son of Pritha, is impermanent. It is called asad and is useless, both in this life and in the next. So, all yajnanam tapasa, it becomes pure. If it doesn't purify us in this life, then it's a waste. It will only purify us if it is executed with this realization that everything is Krishna is doing that, and that constantly surrendered state executing the spiritual life or material life, all of them. So saying that, Krishna says that any homam, tapas, dhanam, all of them, he says to Arjuna, will not be of any benefit to you, and it will not benefit anybody else. Na iha na ta. Well, the reason is ashraddhaya, because there is no shraddha. Shraddha means this. This is what's called shraddha. Shraddha means to take it that everything is happening through me, all the time in that state to survive, live in this world. I mentioned before also, shraddha does not mean concentration. It's not concentration. Because suppose if you have any desires inside, and then it is ashraddha. It is ashraddha. You may be concentrating. Concentration is not what Krishna is talking about. This word shraddha here is not referring to concentration. Instead, this state of mind, in the surrendered mood, to able to do things to please Krishna, to see Krishna. Krishna has given us an opportunity to serve Krishna. So, utilizing that opportunity, it is Krishna wants me to do this, I am doing that, let this please Krishna, in that way, to do it all the time. So, including even for chanting the holy name, Krishna has given me an opportunity to chant the holy name, I am chanting. And because you can see, mind is concerned, sometimes it is able to focus, sometimes it is not, isn't it? That's not in our hands. It's not in our hands. And if it happens, let it happen. Doesn't matter. But as far as we are concerned, the offering to Krishna is more important. Not the mind is concentrated or not. That's not important. Have you offered it to Krishna or not? That is more important. And because if I don't have any motivations or any desires behind it, then it is pure. Then it is pure. And Krishna is forcing me to do it, or the spiritual masters wants me to do that, I am doing this. That's all. Nothing more than that. I don't know anything else. I have been instructed to do it, I am just doing that. So, similarly, whatever we have taken the vow to chant the holy name a number of times every day, I will just do it because I have been instructed to do it. Krishna wants me to do that, I'm just doing it. In that way you have to do that. Not in any other expectations. Not that, oh, I did for 1 week, nothing much happening. That means you are already expecting the results from that, isn't it? That attitude has to go. It has to be only executed in this understanding. I've been told, Krishna has told us in the Bhagavad Gita, if it is executed like that, it becomes yajnam, dhanam, tapasya. And if it is done like that, it will purify us. That is what Krishna is saying here. And if doing like that, whether the mind is focused or not focused, it doesn't matter. If you are doing it still, able to do it in this understanding, that is Shraddha. That is Shraddha. Instead, sometimes people say, oh, somebody else has to notice that I am chanting my rounds. Everybody should understand that. Or if it becomes for recognition from others, then it is not Shraddha, it is Ashraddha. In that case, what happens is it becomes performance. It becomes a performance. In these days, everything is a performance, isn't it? If it becomes a performance, it is Ashraddha. It is Ashraddha. So, or in other words, doing to impress others or done with many other desires or motivations behind it, or what do I gain from doing this? If I have linked with any of my expectations or desires inside, all that is Ashraddha. Everything is Ashraddha. That is why in the last verse, Krishna is warning that. See that? Ashraddhaya hudam dattam. Tapastaptam kritam chayat. Asad iti uchyade partha. Nachatat pretya no iha. A very stern warning. Krishna is saying there that Ashraddhaya hudam dattam. In Ashraddha means incorporating, involving the mind in it. Expecting results from that. What benefit did I get by doing this? And with all these kind of questions, what am I benefiting by doing this, chanting the holy name? What do I get from the reading Bhagavad Gita or hearing Bhagavadam? With all these motivations, if you execute spiritual life, Krishna is saying, it is asat. That's what Krishna titled it. Tapasa taptam kritam chayad asadit yuchade partha. Partha, it's all asat. It's all asat. Nachatat pretya no iha. Such a thing, such activity will not do anything good for you or for anybody else. It won't help, he's saying. Can't be more straightforward than that, isn't it? So there is a story about this to make it a little bit more clear. When Shivananda Saraswati was in Rishikesh, while he was living at that time, that Mahatma who came up to him and asked this question, that many great people are reading Ramayanam, isn't it? Tyagaraja used to read Ramayanam so much. Ramachandra gave darshanam to Tyagaraja. Tulsidas read Ramayanam, compiled Ramayanam in Ramacharitamanasam. Ramachandra gave darshanam to Tulsidas also. And last 40 years, this Mahatma says to Shivananda Saraswati, last 40 years I have been reading Ramayanam and I have been speaking from Ramayanam, but never Ramachandra came, gave me a darshan, not even in the dreams, he said. Ramachandra never gave me a darshanam even in the dreams, he said. At least in the dreams he could give me some darshanam, if not in the way, even if he doesn't give it to me like the way he gave to Tyagaraja or Tulsidas, he said to him. But instead, what I get my dream is Shurpanaga, Thanaga, Kumbhakarna, and all these personalities are coming in my dreams, he said. Who this Mahatma says to. So never Ramachandra nor Sidadevi, nobody comes, he said. These are the people always coming, he said. So Shivananda says told him that the problem with you is, he said, after reading this Ramayanam, you are counting how much money has come from that. That is the problem. So therefore, that is why Shurpanaga, Thadaga, Kumbhakarna, all these people are coming in your dreams because of that. Therefore, Ramchandra has decided, because you are looking at these things, how much money you have made from that. Therefore, Ramchandra decided, for you that's enough. Now, who? Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and Shurpanaga and Thadaga, that's enough for you, because that's how you are approaching Ramayanam. That's what he was saying to him. So Shraddha is like this, that bhalam bhalecha, that desire for the results, if you are expecting only that, the results from that, and if you are doing that, any spiritual activity, then it is Ashraddha. Then it is Ashraddha. Remember, Krishna has spoken to this very bluntly earlier, that there is not karma bhalasam yogam svabhavastu pravartate. That karmam, what we do, and the result from the karmam, there is no connection. There is no connection. So whether we get the results or don't get the results, whatever happens, whether it come or doesn't come, and it has got its own nature, which one, every karmam. And it is according to that nature that we are executing the karma. We are executing the karma. So, whether we get the results or we don't get the results, whether it comes or not, every karma has its own svabhava in there. Accordingly, we are executing the work. For example, karmam and bhalam, there is no sambandham. There is no relationship. I know it is very difficult to accept that, is it not? But why did Krishna say this to us in the beginning? I think it's in the fourth chapter. But na karma bhala sam yogam svabhavastu pravartate. I think it's in 514, yeah? Yeah. Na karma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. How does that begin? Na kartavyam na cha karmani logasya svajati prabhu. Na karma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. It's a great secret of Krishna telling us these things. Who will tell you these things in this world? You see, na kartrutvam na cha karmani logasya svajati prabhu. Na karma phala samyogam svabhavastu pravartate. This subtle level understanding of Bhagavad Gita is necessary. Otherwise, we will continuously get affected by the modes of nature. Krishna is talking to us with the freedom from the modes of nature. Na kartrutvam, na karmani. If you say this in the modern world, who will accept it? Nobody will accept it, would they? But that doesn't matter. Whether they accept it or not is not our problem. Our problem is this is Shastra. That is the way we have to take it. Today everybody wants to take the ownership of everything, whatever little they have done in this world, and still want to impress the world, and the world should recognize what you have done. So many big people have fallen into this trap. But Krishna is saying to us, na kartrutvam, na karmani, logasya srijati prabhu, na karma phala samyogam, svabhavastu pravartate. If you understand that verse, there is nothing to be proud of anything in this world, isn't it? So, karmam has no relationship with the result, first thing. Then karmam will act in a particular way, according to the svabhav. Karmam will function according to the svabhav of the person. It will happen in that way. It will function in a particular way, but the phalam result will be another svabhav. You see, karmam has one svabhav. Bhalam has another svabhav. There are two different svabhav. Svabhav means the nature of its nature, isn't it? So, because it is like that, not giving importance to either of them as connected each other, instead always it should be done without linking the result and the karma. Because of this, karmam has its svabhavam, bhalam has its svabhavam. That we know in very well in life, isn't it? Though sometimes you can see that you have worked hard, the results didn't come. You didn't do anything, results came. And then but unfortunately what happens is at that time we become too intelligent. We think that, oh, it's all because of me. And then it's nothing to do with that. That's what Krishna is saying. So because it is like that, not to link these two things, karmam and its phalam, and even that understanding, but with Shraddha, if it is executed, homam, dhanam, tapasya, then Krishna is saying, there success will come. There success will come. Instead, if you do anything with any motivations inside that, it will not help here in this world, not even in your spiritual realizations. In self-realization, you won't make any progress there either. That is what he is saying here in the last two lines. Asaditya uchyade
partha najatat pretya no iha.
Najatat pretya no iha. So, Krishna is saying, that will not help you either in the life after death, or even the life here at this moment in time. So that is how Krishna is closing this chapter. And when Krishna said this to Arjuna, Arjuna asked one question. You said to me, Arjuna says to Krishna, yajnam dhanam tapasya should never be given up. If it is like that, what does sannyasa mean? That was Arjuna's question. From this chapter, Arjuna is going in that direction. Is it not that in sannyasam you give up yajnam, dhanam, tapas, everything? Do you not give them up? He said. And some people, some rishis have spoken like that. And what should I do? This was Arjuna's question to Krishna. Krishna says to Arjuna, yajnam, dhanam, tapas, they should never be given up. They should never be given up. That is the truth. It should be done all the time. But while doing all that, doing all those things without attachment, that I am the doer or expectation of results, without the kartrutvam bhoktrutva buddhi. That's what it is called, isn't it? Kartrutva means I am the doer. Bhoktrutva means I am the enjoyer. I expect the results. Without that, everything as an offering to Krishna, if it is done like that, Krishna is saying that that is the proper way to be done. That is why he mentioned in that sixth verse, isn't it, this morning we saw, that etani abhidu karmani, Krishna says, sangam tektva bhalani cha kartyavya niti me partha nischidam madam uttamam nischidam madam uttamam. So, in the last chapter, when Krishna spoke about that Om Tat Sat Idi Nirdesho, then what does it mean? Bhagavad Gita, for example, Upanishads, Brahma Sutram, all of it is Brahma Vidya, isn't it? The knowledge of the self, process of self-realization. And this chapter also, when finishes, in the Bhagavad Gita you will see, Krishna will say there that Brahma Vidya, Mahabharatam, Bhishma Parvam, Brahma Vidya, Yoga Shastram, Brahma Vidya, Yoga Shastram, Shri Krishna, Arjuna Samvadam, Shraddhatray Vibhaga Yoga Namam, Sapta Dashodhyaya Samaptaha. That is how the chapter finishes there, isn't it? So, in this 17th chapter, last chapter, Krishna calls it the Shraddhatray Vibhaga Yoga, isn't it? The divisions of faith. Divisions of faith. And three kinds of Shraddha he has spoken. So, practically Krishna is telling us how we should live in this world properly. And how to live in this world. And he explained to us from the nursery class right up to, just for the children, you talk to them in the same way, right up to the final stage of Om Tat Sat. Om Tat Sat is that perfectional stage. When you have come to Yajna, Dhanam, Tapasya, all, if you follow the path Krishna has spoken, if you execute it like that, finally it ends up in Om Tat Sat. That verse we talked about, isn't it? So this Bhagavad Gita is Upanishads to Brahma Vidyayam. Brahma Vidya it is. You should never forget that. It is Brahma Vidya, knowledge of the self, science of self-realization, if you translate that into English. Science of self-realization. In Shastram, the normal word used is Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is the proper word. So, because it is Brahma Vidya, and because it is beneficial to our life in this world, it is meant for our benefit in this life, in this world, it is called Yoga Shastram. Shraddhatray Vibhaga Yogam. And Krishna finishes this chapter with talking about things which is finally the most auspicious thing for all of us to do. That means, from a very basic level in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna started with us. When we started Bhagavad Gita, we started from a very, very basic level, is it not? Very basic level we started Bhagavad Gita, saying that, Krishna is presenting through Arjuna a personality like all of us, confused, full of desires, full of ownership, I am the doer, so many impurities inside us. It is from that state Bhagavad Gita has begun, isn't it? Bhagavad Gita has begun from that level. And now at the final moment, Krishna is saying that this Shraddha, with that Shraddha, if it is executed, it will purify us and it will bring us to that state. And he closed it down saying that Yam Dhanam Tapasya should never be given up. It should always purify, it should always be performed, all these things. And it is the conclusion of the Upanishads also, in the same way. That's why in Upanishads it will say Bhadram Karnedi Shriyama Devaha. It is a famous verse in the Upanishads. In other words, whatever we are hearing from Shastram, Veda Madhava, the mother of Vedam, she is saying to us that it brings us auspiciousness for us in life. That is how Upanishads will conclude always. to bring, it should bring auspiciousness to us. Tasmai Subhadra Shravase Namo Nama. In the Bhagavatam you can see, if you look into the second canto, there is what is known as Shuka Saraswatam. Shuka Saraswatam means, before Sukadeva Goswami started speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, what he did was, he started invoking the blessings of Mother Saraswati, Saraswati Devi's blessings. Instead of directly asking Saraswati Devi's blessings, he put it like this. It is in the second canto, chapter, Shuka Saraswatam, it is called. Shuka Saraswatam means Shukadeva Brahmarshi's prayers to Saraswati Devi. Saraswati Devi. That comes in the Kirada Honam Rapulinda Pulkasam Abhira Ganga Yavana Kasadaya Yeni Japapa Yaduva Shreya Shreya Shudhyandi Tasmai Prabhavishnavi Namam. Those verses are all coming. Tapasino dana paraya sasino manasino mandravido sumangala. That is called, that those verses are called Shubhasarasvatam. Shubhasarasvatam. Yeah. It is in the fourth chapter, second canto. Verse 12 to 23. It's called Shubhasarasvatam. Namaparasmai Purushaya Bhuyase Sadhut Bhavastana Nirodhali Ilaya Grihida Shakti Tradayaya Dehinam Andarbhava Andarbhavayan Ubalakshavarmani. Then it goes, Namo Namaste Drishabaya Sattvanam Vidurakashtaya Mohukku Yoginam Nirastra Samya Adishayena Radhasa Sothamani Brahmani Ramsyade Nama. Yalkirtanam Yalsmaranam Yadikshanam Yadvandanam Yachravanam Yadarhanam Logasya Sadhyo Vidhunodi Kalmasho Tasmai Subhadra Shravase Namo Nama. Vijakshanaya Charano Vasadhanan Sangam vidasyo bhayado andara almana vindandihi brahmagadim gadaklama tasmai subhadra shravase namo nama. Tapasino dhanabaraya shasino manasino mandravido sumangala kshemanda vindandivinaya darpanam tasmai subhadra shravase namo nama. Kiradahu nandrapulinda vilkasam abhira ganga yavana khasadaya yeni jababa yaduba shraya shraya shudhyandi Tasmai Prabhavishnavi Nama. So, Tasmai Subhadra Shravasai Namo Nama. So Krishna is saying to us that Bhagavad Gita gradually elevates a person when one studies with a deeper understanding of the Shastram. And the next chapter is very big chapter compared to all other chapters and requires more time as well. So, and it is one of the most important chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. You can see from the title of the chapter itself. The chapter in English is called Perfection of Renunciation. Actually, the title is addressed as Moksha Sanyasa Yoga. Moksha Sanyasa Yoga. And the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita, you see, all these great personalities, when they want to give a shastra, what they do is, first they will tell you in summary. You can see in Bhagavad Gita also. Second chapter is the summary. Then they will expand it. So after second chapter, right up to 17th chapter, it's an expansion of that, what they have spoken in the second chapter. Then they will summarize everything and stress again in a summary. They'll give it to us. That's the 18th chapter. All great personalities who present Shastram, this is their process. First they will talk to you in summary, like the second chapter. Then all the way right up to the end of 17th chapter, they have expanded what was spoken in the 2nd chapter. They expanded on that. And then finally, after hearing all this, we will lose it, because we are like that. Nothing will stay in the head. So therefore, they will bring it back again and summarize again before people go away, so that it gets into their mind once again. That is the Vedic system also. Vedic system is like that. First they will tell you in summary, then they will expand on that, then they will again summarize it and put it to you. So you will practically notice now, this 18th chapter is the final message from Krishna. And then, so that 18th chapter we will continue. So it is a big chapter. At the same time, the whole message of Bhagavad Gita is there in that chapter. And that will take a little longer time also. So as Krishna says, that the title of this chapter is, it's also interesting, Moksham Sannyasam Yoga, isn't it? And generally if you tell these two words to people, they're frightened. Suppose somebody, Krishna tells you, I'll give you liberation today. You'll say to Krishna, I'm not in a rush, no. I can wait for a while. We'll say, because moksham frightens people. What will happen tomorrow, we don't know, after leaving this world. We are so grounded in this world that even if Krishna comes and tells us that he will offer us liberation, we are such people, we will say to Krishna, no, I didn't ask for that, we will say. That's our nature. Because of our attachment here in this world. Listen, we are not ready for it. That is the problem. And that is why, although we will say, oh, we will pray to Krishna, give me liberation, when he gives it to you, you say, I don't want it, you will say it to him. That's our nature. So, moksham, nobody likes it. Although we may say so many things. Sannyasam also, nobody wants it. The way Krishna has spoken, isn't it? So, both these words, moksham and sannyasam, are frightening words for everybody. It's frightening. Sannyasa means you give up all your home, family, everything, and wander around the whole world. You have no more a place of abode to live. And you also are supposed to be in service to the rest of the humanity, isn't it? Human society. So, moksham and sannyasam is a name Krishna has given to this chapter. Moksham and sannyasam, isn't it? So, here, when Krishna is saying this, that means that the final, a sort of final conclusion of life, perfection of life, or conclusion of life, coming to that state in life, that is what Krishna is referring to as sannyasam and moksham. That means after living in this world for a long period of time, and living in a proper way, finally getting ready to depart from here. And that preparation inside, one who has come to that stage, he will get benefited from this chapter. You know what I'm saying? That one who has seen this life and what it is worth, and if there is anything to be gained in this world, it's only Krishna consciousness, nothing else. Is it not? Everything else is a loss at the end. Either you have to leave it or they will leave us, including this body. So if there is one thing that is you can carry with us while leaving this world, is Krishna consciousness. Nothing else. So if one has come to that deep understanding inside, for him these words sannyasam, moksham will mean something. Otherwise not. Suppose I have so many big desires to change the world, or to big projects running through my head, then I am not ready for it. I am still thinking in terms of setting up something here, not realizing that death is coming. It will take away everything, including this body will go. And it is the finale of the life. He is waiting. Any moment the curtain can fall and we are gone from here. So Krishna's point is, when he gave this title, Moksha Sannyasa Yogam, he is targeting those people who are ready for it. Only for them it will be beneficial. And who is ready for it? Anyone who has got some power to think about life, who understands that this life is not everything, there's something beyond than this life in our first of all, realizing who we are, is it not? Not this material body, something beyond this body, and our relationship with Krishna, and Atma's transcendental nature. So many things Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, in these so many chapters, is it not? He explained all that. So with all that knowledge in the background, if you look at ourselves, you can see that these purushartham, what we call it, dharma, artham, kama, moksha, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, liberation, all four different things, and then those four things, or what we generally tell, this is all referring to in the framework of Vedic culture. That's how you have to see it. You can't look at it, because we have lost a culture, doesn't mean that Vedic culture is wrong. We lost a culture, what can be done? But scriptures were not written, it is meant for a perfect society, because only in a perfect society these things can be can help you to reach perfection. So it is keeping a varnashama dharmam, brahmachari, grahastham, vanaprastham, sannyasam, these four ashramam, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, these four varnam, and then dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, liberation. All these things are a structured way, or in other words, it's actually meant for a very civilized society, this message of Bhagavad Gita. Only that will help to perfect, make it perfect in life. So there is underlying thoughts behind it when Krishna has instituted all these principles. You can look at this way. Our life in this world is controlled by our desires, isn't it? We know that, our desires. So, in order that the desires to get fulfillment, one of the major factors is the money behind it, isn't it? So, those two things are called purushartham. Purushartham it is called. Purushartham means that not that what Purusha has to achieve in this life, in other words, what gives happiness to a Purusha, what gives happiness to a person. So that's what it means. That purushartham means basically not that what a Purusha must have, that what a Purusha will make that person happy. What will make a person happy? Because these things, kamam, desires inside, and if the desires are there, then money is required. If there is, suppose there is no desires inside, then what do you have to work for? There is no need for any money, isn't it? Artham is not necessary. So only when kamam is there, artham is necessary. That is why artha kamam is kept together. Dharmam, artham, kamam, moksham. Out of this, artha kamam is in the middle. Dharmam is the basis. Moksham is the goal. Artha kamam is in the middle. So artha kamam is based on our desires. The more the desires, the more artham necessary. The less the desire, less artham. Artham means money. Yes. So, purushartham, so therefore purushartham is in this understanding that another way they say it is, in a polished way, if you say fulfillment.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Fulfillment, they say. So, in the modern language. So, that fulfillment, which Krishna is calling here, is based on in a physical level, based on a mental level, all fulfillment is required, is it not? So, or psychological level, fulfillment. So, all these things, this fulfillment is nothing but fulfilling our desires in life, bodily desires, mental desires, intellectual desires, all other things, psychological desires. So, in order to fulfill all these things, we require money. We require money in this world. So, that is the reason why money has got so much importance in this world. That's the only reason. Otherwise, what does it matter, these 20-pound or 100-pound notes, and you see it, what is a piece of paper. But because it is used for fulfilling these desires inside, that's why money got the importance, isn't it? So we are not working for the sake of the money, actually, but what we are doing is to fulfill the desires we are working. Not for earning the money. but fulfilling the desires, isn't it? So you can see that when people see huge amount of money, cash, you can see there that, oh, that something worthwhile looking at, isn't it? So that's why people look at it. People look at it. So you can see how our desires is linked with this cash. Prabhupada used to make a joke of that. He used to say that only two things in this world you can rely on, he said. What is that? One is chanting the holy name, and he said, cash in hand. Jokingly mentioned. Cash in hand and chanting the holy name, he said. So in other words, it is such a thing that it makes us wonder. But once that desires have gone, then what do you do with all the money? It has not much of a use either, isn't it? So, suppose the government decides tomorrow that all this cash is, they made it, you know, it is not worthwhile anymore, then you won't even look at the notes, isn't it? What do you care for? Because it's not of any use to fulfill your desires. So, all these things have no importance anymore. It's only important as much as to the extent that it is fulfilling our desires, otherwise not. So, practically you can see that cash is nothing, money is nothing, but it's a symbol of our fulfillment of something that helps to fulfill our desires inside. Fulfill our desires inside. So, so money and the desires, they are not purushartham, but that is actually our swabhava, our vasana inside, or our prakriti inside us, isn't it? According to our prakriti, our swabhava, our vasana, our desires, our accumulation of wealth, everything will happen. So, prakriti, these are different words used in reference to our nature. We call it as swabhavam, we call it as prakriti. In a more crude way, we call it as kamam, desires, isn't it? So, all our activities work in this world. Krishna said in the verse, kayena vaja manasendriya eva buddhyal manava prakriti swabhaval karomi yadyat sakalam parasmai narayanaya samapayami. So, there that word, prakritihe swabhavat. Prakritihe swabhavat. That means kayena, by the body. Prakritihe swabhavat. Vacha. Prakritihe swabhavat. That means body will work in a particular way according to my swabhava. Isn't it? I will speak in a particular way according to my swabhava. Similarly, my mind will work in a particular way according to my swabhava inside. That is what that verse is saying. Kayena vacha manasendriyeva, all prakriti swabhava. According to my prakriti, according to my swabhavam, it will function in this world. It will function in this world. So prakriti, similarly buddhi also, intelligence also. Buddhi also, prakritihe swabhava. According to my prakriti and swabhavam, my buddhi will work. All these things, kaya, body, mind, and my speech, words, my intelligence, everything is dependent on my prakriti and swabhava. Prakritihe swabhava. That's what that verse is saying. Isn't it? So, prakriti means what? You can say in English, the individualistic nature. Every individual has his own nature. Isn't it? So, how is that made of? What is that made of? It's made of desires. It's made of desires. Made of desires. Desire means desiring various things. That is my nature. That is my prakriti. So, it is because that desire is there inside, that is why material nature is still there in us. Modes of nature is still in us. Because the desires are there. Isn't it? So, so according to that, according to that desires inside, in line with that, all our senses of knowledge and all our senses of action will function in this world. That means the five senses of knowledge and the five senses of action, they will do their vyavaharam, transactions in this world, according to the desires inside. So if you try to control the senses of knowledge and senses of action or mind or intelligence, if you try to control them, it will not work. It will not work. Normal. Because first thing, my pragriti has to change. We have not understood this principle. Often we say, oh, you should control your mind. You should It won't. It won't. It's not possible. Because inside me, there is that pragritehe svabhavat. My pragriti, my svabhavam. That will override all my senses of knowledge, all my senses of action, and also my mind, intelligence, everything. That will override all of them. My mind, my intelligence, my senses of knowledge, my senses of action, all of that, this pragriti or svabhavam will override. Will override. Krishna is saying to us, explains that very well in the Bhagavatam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Because we don't give attention to that. We think everything is possible to change. I can change it. We can't change it. You cannot do anything about it because of this pragriti. So, unless this pragritehe svabhavat, it changes, unless that happens, these things won't fall under control. They won't come under control. In the Bhagavad Gita, you know what Krishna calls it as? If you look in the 13th chapter, there's a verse there. He puts it very nicely there. Bhuta pragriti moksham. He calls it there. Bhuta pragriti moksham cha ye viduhu. 13th chapter. Now and then Krishna will say few things. We may not understand the depth of that statement when Krishna said that in the 13th chapter. Kshetra-kshetrajnayor evam andharam jnana-chetasa bhuta-prakriti-mokshancha yevidur yanti te param. Those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature attain to the supreme goal. See, Buddha Prakriti Moksham, that's the word, important word there. He calls it as Buddha Prakriti Moksham. What does Buddha Prakriti Moksham mean? Buddha Prakriti, Panjabhudam is this body, Prakriti, and the Svabhavam that's coming from this body, Ye Viduhu, Buddha Prakriti Moksham, that means this Prakriti which is controlling us. What is that Prakriti? Our Svabhavam inside, which is controlling us. Vedantam, they call it as avidya. Avidya, inside us, which is inside everybody. Is it not? So, it is that avidya inside me that is controlling me all the time. Whether when I am doing something with my body, something with my mind, something with my words, or with my senses of knowledge or senses of action. Behind all these things, my pragriti svabhavat, my pragriti and svabhavam has a very powerful effect, influence on that. And till that svabhavam or pragriti has gone away, if you try to control your senses of knowledge or senses of action, it will never come under control. First of all, this svabhavam has to go from inside, or pragriti has to go from inside, otherwise it won't happen. And that is what Krishna calls it as Buddha Prakriti Moksham. Buddha Prakriti, that our svabhava, Buddha Prakriti, it is called, body is called Panchabhudam. Panchabhudam's Prakriti, that means this Prakriti inside each one of us. Till we have got released from that, this control of senses, control of mind, control of the senses of knowledge, all these things won't happen. He has already said that in the 13th chapter. So therefore, what the rishis have told us is, as long as you have this prakriti inside working, swabhavam or prakriti is working inside us, you've got to know how to keep everything within a frame. That means, suppose I have desires, a lot of desires, and I'm finding it difficult to come out of it. The desires are there, prakriti swabhavam is there. And I know very well, if I try to foolishly control the mind and senses and intelligence and all that, it will not work, because my swabhavam has a powerful grip on that, and it will influence every moment, even when I make a decision, or when I speak something, or when I do physically something, or even in my mind, it is working all the time. This Buddha Prakriti is working. So, as long as you have this Prakriti or Sabhavam inside, Rishis are telling us, that means, nature of this Buddha Prakriti or Sabhavam means desires, in the form of desires inside us. So, those desires, the Rishi says to us, that you keep them within a framework, within a certain framework. The rishis never told us don't have any desires, because they know it won't happen. It's no point in telling anybody that because of desires only we have come to this world. Otherwise we wouldn't have come to this world, is it not? So, to understand this chapter, 18th chapter, you got to know the background of this. Otherwise it won't make any sense. You'll read, otherwise it will be like another commandment. You do all this for rules after rules. It's no use studying Bhagavad Gita like that. Bhagavad Gita has got a very deep psychology behind it. How Krishna who created us, he knows us better, is it not? He gave us this material body. He knows what is packaged inside, how this body is functioning. So his point is, and the Rishi is also telling us, that it is no point in telling someone, don't have desires. So, therefore what they told us is that you do one thing, make a framework first. Within that framework, you live in this world. So that those desires, what is inside, they are all kept under check. They don't go uncontrolled way. That's what's happening in the modern society, if you look. Because all the shastram, all the rishis, when you look at one society who has lived under this principle, you will see they were always peaceful in this world. They lived their life in a peaceful way, they left this world in a peaceful way, and they reached the goal in a peaceful way. Only through peace you can get to the goal, not by fighting, killing, arguing each other, or, all these modern ideas, this all has to be given up, but you can't do anything about it. People are thinking, I am the only way, you have to come through me, this one idea. Another is that by preaching and propagating, everything can be changed, and it won't. That's my prakriti is coming through that. What can be done? So Krishna says to us that as much as these desires are inside, prakriti is there, sabhavam is inside, that make some boundary, and within that boundary you got to live in this world. That means you don't completely have to give up all the desires, but always there is a restriction, where how far you can go in all these things, isn't it? Just like as a train going on a railway track, isn't it? So, dharmam is necessary for that purpose. Remember? That's why dharmam is necessary. Dharmam, you can't write it off under any circumstances. If you throw away dharmam and saying sarvadharman paritejya, it will not work. You will fall. You won't be able. That's not such an easy statement. If you read Bhagavad Gita properly, and Krishna has said that sarvadharman paritejya at the very end of Bhagavad Gita, after you have gone through Bhagavad Gita and you have come to that level of realization, then sarvadharman paritejya will work. Otherwise it won't work. So that is the most important thing to know. So Krishna is saying here also that stay within that boundary, and in that, with staying within that boundary, fulfill your desires, whatever you have come up with. Okay. So that means you will have a terminus where you are going to go. Just like you can see, if the train is running on two tracks, isn't it, on a line. If it's going on that line, it will reach the terminus. But if the train start running on the street, on the road, it won't get to the destination. So Krishna is saying here that just like if you have a track, there will be a route. Yeah. Similarly, dharma is that route or the track, what Krishna is talking about. So Vedam instructs everybody to stay in that track and do the dharmam. After dharmam, first of all, before giving up dharmam, all adharmam has to go. Otherwise, giving up dharmam is easy, isn't it? It's not very difficult. Giving up adharmam is more difficult, is it not? So, Vedavyasa Maharshi, what he is saying in the Mahabharata about this is, he says, you can have money in this world, you can earn wealth, you can fulfill your desires also, but finally, you have to get purified inside. Chittashuddhi must happen, and the knowledge must be realized. Knowledge of the self must be realized. And in order to do that, take the shelter of dharmam, he says. There's the shelter of dharmam. And be dependent on dharmam. So, and he says, nobody is listening. He says, nobody is listening. He says, in the verse in the Mahabharatam is very nicely spoken. He says there, Urdhubahu Viravimesha. Urdhubahu means like this. This is Urdhubahu. Vedavyasa Maharshi is doing this to the world. With both the hands on the top of the head, Urdhubahu is speaking to the world. What he is saying here? Nada kaschil shranodhi me. What is the use? You will say something like this when you become totally helpless, isn't it? Nobody is listening. And that's what he is saying here. Nada kaschil shranodhi me. I am saying like this to the world, but nobody is listening. Vedavyasa is saying this to us. What is that? Dharmad arthascha kamascha. Dharmad arthascha kamascha kinna sevyede. That dharmam is prior to artham and kamam. You can have artham, you can have kamam, but keep within the boundary of dharmam. Otherwise, it will cause, you will not make any progress in spiritual life. Chitta shuddhi won't happen. Self-realization won't happen. Knowledge of the self won't be there. It is Medhavasa Maharshi, Krishna's incarnation himself, isn't it? He is saying to us, so all great Mahatmas, they had this problem in this world. When they wanted to help the world in their own way from their realizations, nobody will listen to this about dharma. If you tell them, what will happen is that dharma, who cares for dharma? That's the attitude. Most of the people will take that. So first thing is, Krishna is saying, Vedavyasa is saying here, that unless you are within a framework of dharmam, that is the boundary Krishna has, rishis have put it on, within that dharmam that you can fulfill your desires, fulfill your plans in life, whatever, you know, to fulfill all that. So if you do like that, what will happen is, Krishna is saying here, that you will always remain within that dharmam and there will be a limitation, but you can fulfill all your basic necessities in life in that way. The basic necessities of life. So, that is a circle for fulfilling that basic necessities. But if you leave that circle and go outside, and then you won't have any foundation. You won't have any basis. You will have no foundation. This is a big problem in the modern world, you can see. That just like we had this news about the teacher being killed in Leeds, isn't it, in school. If you come look at the analysis of the so-called intellectuals about it, if you read it, nobody understands what the problem is it not? We have given them an education in such a way then there is no dharma, there is no principles in life, everything is oriented towards intellectual understanding of life without any proper understanding of the principles of life, isn't it? Rishis have seen all these things. They knew that if you don't keep these principles, underlying principles as the foundation, whatever education you are giving, it's all a waste of time. It's not going to work. And you can see how it comes back to us. In our own life, we are watching this. Imagine this. We're supposed to be one of the most advanced society. And this is what we see. Is it not? That a teacher being killed by the student, unheard of, things like that can happen. And that's happening all the time, so many different places, is it not? So, why rishis told us these things? Because they are telling us that your material development, economic development and fulfilling desires is not the priority. First, you become yourself in a stable situation, mentally stable. Most of these children don't have any mental stability. They're completely confused. And who have to blame? The society has to blame for this. The leaders. Who else has to be blamed? They have not given them that stability in their life. And because they are destabilized inside, all these things are happening. All these things are happening. So, Vedavyas is saying to us that I am telling them dharmam, 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 but nobody is listening. Nobody is listening. But one thing you have to remember, this dharmam is also not perfect. Dharmam is also, because Krishna says that, dharmam is necessary, but dharmam is not perfect. Why? The only thing that is perfect is Atma. Atma is the only thing that is perfect. So, dharmam is a general thing. Dharmam is a general thing. So, dharmam, what it does is, it keeps us in a framework. That's what dharmam does. Suppose all these dharmic rules are there, the purpose of that dharmam is that you won't go crazy and do things. Because you'll be frightened about dharmam, isn't it? That is why all the smriti, manusmriti, parashara smriti, they all, do you think the rishis were so stupid that to write all those books? Based on the Vedam, shruti, they created smriti. Isn't it? There is Yajnavalkya Smriti, Parashara Smriti, Manusmriti. So many smritis are written. Smritis were given why? To keep us within the framework of dharma. That was the idea behind the smriti. Smriti is full of instructions. This is allowed, this is not allowed, this is allowed, this is not allowed. So many things. But all based on the shruti, based on the Vedam. So smriti came from on that principle. And smriti has been given to us so that we remain within the framework of dharma. Otherwise, if there is no shruti, no smriti, what will be the principle? Just make money in life, no matter what it matters. The whole society is in that way geared up, is it not? You can tell lies, you can cheat anybody, you can do what you like, so long as you don't get caught. That's the principle. This is the kind of society we have to live with, is it not? So, therefore, another principle behind that is, if we follow this dharma, many, many problems in life you can avoid. How? One thing is that others won't give you trouble, and you also don't give trouble to others. That's why dharma is necessary. Suppose there is no dharma, what will happen? You can see what's happening, isn't it? How the things are happening. And when you are living in a society like this, all the time, without being any principles or dharma in life, and if you see the whole society is running on that principle, it does affect your consciousness also. Naturally it will affect, is it not? Because you are always put into anxiety by these people who don't follow any dharma in life. That affects everybody. And that is why all this anxiety builds up unnecessarily in our life. So, idea is that we don't give trouble to ourselves, and at the same time, we don't give trouble to others. So that is that track, dharma. The track, what it does. And that also is not perfect. Because you can see here, even if you remain in dharma, suppose you followed all the dharma, still you cannot say that you will be totally peaceful. That is also there. That we have to know, acknowledge that. Because sometimes people say, I have done everything, you know, without causing any trouble to anybody, I lived in this world. But still he gets problems in life. So what happens? He loses all the faith in the dharma. Then he starts saying, I have followed a dharmic life and I am suffering. But somebody else is not following any dharma in his life and he is flourishing. In materially, I am saying, he is flourishing. So the man who follows dharma, he starts thinking, then what's the point in following dharma if it is going to be like this? But what we have to remember is, dharma is also not perfect. And even if you lived in the prose, in the way as dharmam, dharmic way, still perfection in shandi will may not happen. It is at that time the rishis have found out this thing, that you have your desires, fulfill your desires little by little in life, but eventually you got to transcend them. That is their way of solving the problem. What they are telling us is that you live the life in such a way that you fulfill your desires to some extent within the framework of dharma, but finally knowing well dharma itself is not the goal and dharma itself is not the solution to the problem, and finally you transcend everything. That means by then the desires also must go away in life. So at the final stage in life, in one's life, by giving up everything, by giving up something, we will become perfect at that stage. Because we have gone through the life and lived a life of dharmam, and at the finally we realize it that dharmam also is not the solution to the problem. Solution to the problem is realization of the self only. In that way, you will lose your attachment for fulfilling desires at the end. So, you go beyond that, transcending the desires also. So, at that point in time in life, when we come to this realization, that I am not going to get that shanti or peace, what Krishna is talking about, by fulfilling the desires, this realization will come. You see, initially in life we all think that if I get this, I get that, I also get so many other things, I'm going to become happy. This is the illusion I start working, is it not? But when you have lived through the life, and if you have lived within the framework of dharma, Krishna is telling us that at the final moment you will come to know, I mean later part of the life, in the old age, you will know that this fulfilling desires also is not the solution to the problem. And in a natural way, automatically, that desire for fulfilling your desires will go. Will go from inside. And that will take into, that will make you more perfect within. Inside you will feel more perfect. Outside may be different story. But it is the perfection inside that Krishna has given importance to. So that important realization will come in that way. So the rishis have told us that that is the way, that not by acquiring things or not by collecting things or increasing our material assets in this world that I will become perfect. Instead, those desires that has been driving me all these years, once I have come out of those desires, I will start realizing that I am becoming more perfect. Purnada, shanti will come to me. This realization has to come inside, not otherwise. This is the principle. That is why rishis have given this a framework within which to live in this world. And in order to facilitate that, all this varnashrama dharma, and varna dharma, ashrama dharma, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, brahmajari, grihastham, vanaprastham, sannyasam, and then dharma, artham, kama, moksham, they are all together. They are not separate individually. They are not separate ones. They are all together to make a person finally to come to this understanding at the end of life. You worked all your life, you have, at one time you thought that money is the answer to all the problems, or social life is the answer to all the problems. So many illusions in the head. None of them will solve our problem. Our problem is something that I have a deep inside me, I have avidya inside, a jnanam inside, that is my problem. So Krishna is saying, To come to that, first, this Prakriti or Svabhavam has to go from inside. Prakriti Svabhavam means the desires inside. And that desires are there because it's giving us a false security from these desires. Desires are telling us from inside, if I fulfill all these desires, I'll be safe, I'll be protected in this world. But at some point in life, you'll come to know that these desires are all nothing but they are fooling me. They wasted all my life by taking me in the wrong route. This is not the solution to the problem. Instead, I'll realize that the actual solution to the problem is that these desires must leave me. That is the escape route. If the desires go away, Krishna is saying, then this dharmam is not anymore important. You see, dharmam finishes there. Once you are completely purified inside, all your material desires have gone away from inside, then there is no necessity for dharmam to follow. Dharmam has no more. It is at that stage you can give up dharmam. Not otherwise. Not otherwise. So that is why Krishna says here that it may look like a small statement about dharmam, what Krishna has spoken. But one thing you have to remember that in this world, if we want to move from one position to another, generally in this world, if you want to move up in the ladder, you have to work and earn something, isn't it? That's a normal principle in this world. Just like people say, I moved house, what do you call it? Property ladder. To keep changing every year, isn't it? To sell the property, buy another property. Prices should go up every few years. And that is on the property side. And then on professional side, another career is going, ladder is going on there. So people are busy with all these things, isn't it? So in the world, in the material life, if you want, you have to keep on getting something to move up all the time, isn't it? And that's all what we have learned in life. That's all what we know about life, isn't it? And unfortunately, what happens is, that same mentality is there when we come to spiritual life also. That is where whole problem starts. You can see this clearly in people's life if you look at it. That when they come to Adhyatmam, spiritual life also, we are coming with this understanding, I have to achieve something, I have to get something, and I have to get Krishna. I have to become a guru, I have to become a sannyasi, I have to become a president, temple president, or whatever these ideas they have in their head, isn't it? I have to become this, I have to become that. So this becoming business is a problem in spiritual life. So you can see the differences. In material life, we have to work and we have to keep on getting more all the time, new things. Only then you are moving up and up, isn't it? Whether it's house, whether it's job, whether it's something else, whatever it is, it's all this getting business. And that's what is going up all the time. And that same mentality, we bring it to spiritual life also. We bring it to spiritual life also. And we are thinking that, I haven't got that, I haven't got there that far. I haven't studied all the shastras. I haven't done this parikrama. I haven't done that parikrama. I haven't gone to that place. I haven't gone to this place. Lot of things in the head like this. And you're thinking like this, that when I've done all that, then next what? This is the way mind works, is it not? So what is point here is that this desire, it is there in the spiritual life also. So therefore we're saying, oh, I haven't got this realization, I haven't got that knowledge of the self, or my kundalini has not risen to the sahasraram, as a yogi says, things like that. So that means this achievement business, I have to achieve something. Achievement it is called, is it not? Then achievement and or some perfections I have to get here in spiritual life also. So many siddhis, for example. This is where siddhis are coming from. That means I have to reach that state of meditation, dhyanam, or samadhi. Things like that. These are all the symptoms of this mind that is working within. So, sometimes people will ask this question, that they have a big question, how many rounds we should chant? You will see people asking this question. people accept it now because Prabhupada said 16. But then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was chanting 64. So people ask this question, should I chant 16 or 64? You can see from the very question itself that whether he is chanting 16 or 64, the motive behind it is, when I am going to have it? When am I going to get it? That is a very clear underlying thought behind it, is it not? So, similarly, you can also see this meditation courses and all that. People go for that, isn't it? Like yoga classes. They go for the meditation courses. And then they will ask the question to the people who are running the courses, that how long will it take for me to experience that samadhi state? They will ask this question. They won't have any problem. Because we are all these corporate people, aren't we? We believe in corporate life. Gurus are corporate. The spiritual life is corporate. Institutions are all corporate. Everything, if it's run on a corporate basis, it suits us. We fall for it straight away. And if anything steps out of that corporate approach, then we find it very hard. We find it is very vague, we say. It doesn't work. The only thing that will work for us is this corporate setup. And they are all trapped in this. And spiritual life, if you make it corporate spiritual life, it won't work. Unfortunately, this is the only place where that doesn't work. And you can see our mind, how badly trained it is in that way. Is it not? So that is why in Bhagavad Gita Bhashyam you will see this, that karmam, they have divided that. How karmam? Ulpadyam, arpyam, they mention it like this. That how karmam is categorized into 3-4 different categories. When we discussed that second chapter, we spoke about that also. So, these two things, ulpadyam and arpyam, what are they? In the world, that's what we have got. Ulpadyam is production, arpyam is consuming. Production, consumption. Production, consumption, isn't it? And these are the two things what we do in this world. So, same way, that same principle, we are trying to use that in spiritual life. Spiritual life is antarikam, isn't it? Antarikam means internally. It's an internal thing. And then internal life also, antarika jivitam, it's called spiritual life. There also, we are trying to use this technique. Which one? Production and the result. Consumption. Production, consumption. And it will never work out. It will never work in the spiritual life. The earlier we know these things, the better. Then you don't get trapped into all these things. Because this is how a lot of institutions in this world, they saw the people are like that. So what they also knew, the people who started the institution, that it doesn't work like that. But then when you get all customers who can only follow that route, so what did they do? They started making it tailor-made to the needs of the customer. And that's why all the courses, seminars, if you look at all the courses, seminars advertised in different institutions, you will see that they have structured it for people. And telling them that this course, that course, this seminar, that seminar, number of them, I see this advertised in all institutions in the world. You will notice this happening there. And that's the only thing, it will not work. Probably it will give you help, some help, that you will go to these places. You can spend a week or 10 days or 2 weeks, because you don't have the time also. You say, no, you're busy with other things in this life. So when you go there, after 2 weeks, you will feel a little chitta shanti, peace. Because 2 weeks you are away from your working environment. That's all it is, nothing else. But spiritually, if you ask the question, have you moved further, progressed? The answer is no, you haven't. Because if you have advanced spiritually, the symptom of that is that shanti inside all the time. Not for those 2 weeks only. After 2 weeks you come back to work, and within 2 days the whole shanti has gone from inside, isn't it? So, in spiritual life, there is nothing to achieve. That's the first thing. There's nothing to achieve. And nothing to become in the future. And nothing to know in the future. Jihasa Navrti, Jijnyasa Navrti, in the Panchadeshi, if you look, there Vidyaranya Swamiji explains this. How do you think the rishis have gone up so much? By getting rid of the desires from inside. Not by filling the desires. They never went up. They went up because they realized it finally, all this is useless. This filling the desires. So that's why when we come to study Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam, they are saying to us, or Upanishads for that matter, they are saying to us that the more you have come out of all these desires, you are ready for the knowledge. Ready for the knowledge. At that time, all karmam gets finished. All karmam gets finished. And all desires goes away. And even desire for knowledge also goes away from inside. Remember, Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, you will see two chapters. Karma sannyasam, jnana karma sannyasam. Two chapters, fourth and fifth. Is it not? So what does that mean? Sannyasam is necessary in karmam. Sannyasam is necessary in jnanam also. Both jnanam and karmam is actually our where we are in this world. It is beyond our existence, is beyond this jnana karmam. Isn't it? So when all the desires have gone away, that means desires means, suppose you have desires, that means in order to fulfill that desires you need the knowledge. Is it not? You need the knowledge. And then after that, action. After that, action. So these three things. First thing, I have ignorance in me, ajnanam, avidya inside. Because of that avidya, I have desires. That is the indication of that. Is it not? That, why do I have desires? Because I have avidya inside. Avidya. From avidya comes kamam, desires. And from kamam comes karma. Kundi Devi mentioned this in the prayers, isn't it? Bhavesmin klishyamananam avidya kamam karmabhi. She puts it very openly. Bhavesmin klishyamananam avidya kama karmabhi. So, avidya kama karmabhi. So, in this world, we achieve many, many things. Many things we achieve here. Because there is desire behind it, isn't it? Because we have desire, and in order to fulfill the desires, what do? To fulfill those desires, whatever knowledge that is required to get that, we acquire that first, is it not? And then after that, action starts. So, similarly, this principle, avidya kama karma bhi, you can't apply that inside spiritual life. In spiritual life, you can't apply that. This is an important point. Krishna is saying to us that bhavesmin krishyamananam avidya kama karma bhi, that avidya kamam karmam, they are one behind the other. And that will work in your material life. That will not work in spiritual life. The first thing to take notice of. Because if you don't take notice of this, you know what will happen? You will follow the world. What the world tells you to do. What the society tells you to do. Because they also don't know that this is the secret of spiritual life. They are thinking that doing a lot in this world is the solution to all the problems. Because that's all what they understood in spiritual life. But Krishna is saying to us that it is a very fundamental principle in spiritual life. That avidya kama karma bhi. That from avidya comes kamam, from kamam comes karmam. If these three things are, if you take it inwardly, it will not operate there. It will not operate there. So, this cannot be applied inside. Krishna is saying here, first thing is, he said, remove the avidya. Remove the avidya from inside. Then what will happen? Kamam will go. Is it not? Kamam has come because of avidya. So let avidya go first, kamam will go. When kamam goes away, karmam will stop. That's the way it works. First of all, avidya has to go. And if avidya goes away, kamam won't come. Desires come because of avidya inside. So if the avidya goes inside, avidya goes away, karma will go. If karma goes away, karma will stop. Otherwise, karma won't stop. It will be life after life, karma only. One life after another life. Because why? Karma is there. Why karma is there? Avidya is there. You see? It will see, you will see in the Bhagavatam in many, many places, this spoken in a very nice way. Rishis have seen where the problem is. Problem is not in the karma. Problem is not in the karma. Problem is in the avidya. Avidya is the foundation for this, for karma and karma. Isn't it? So, so karma is in the physical level. Action happens, isn't it? Physical level. And it also, that action will cease. It won't happen again. Why? Because in the platform of the mind, desires has come to an end. Where is the desire? Desire is in the platform of the mind, is it not? So all the desires in the mind have stopped. So naturally, all the actions on the body also stops, isn't it? And in the in a much more deeper level, you can say, in the deepermost level, that ignorance also disappears. Ignorance also disappears. That avidya, what is operating in all of us, is what we call it as prakriti, svabhavam and all that. It is that avidya only. Different names are used at different places. That's all it is. Vastu is the same. It's the same thing that is spoken. So, so what is interesting here is, once that avidya goes away from inside, that as much as suppose the avidya is slowly disappearing inside, it's all a gradual thing. It won't go one lot in one instance. It's going to go, not going to go. So that you'll start realizing after the, when this avidya goes away from inside, you start seeing there that even when things are coming still in life, we will become very limited people. Limited means that more and more things are leaving us. Because only because of desires things are coming around, isn't it? First of all, avidya is there. From avidya come, desires have come. Because of desires have accumulated so many things in life. Going after money, wealth, all other, name, fame, all other things. But what will happen, Krishna is saying here, that as much as you are acquiring things in life, you will become more and more limited. Instead, more and more leave you, you will become more and more broader inside. This is the inside world. In the outside world, the more and more things, if it goes, if you keep on accumulating more and more things inside, in outside, inside you will become shrink. You will shrink inside. Why? Because outside you are busy in collecting things. But if outside everything goes away, the inside world will expand. This is the principle. This is the principle. So, finally, if you understand it properly, that if everything is gone, why this sannyasam is glorified so much in the Shastra? Because of this only. That we leave everything. Sannyasam is supposed to be like that, isn't it? You are leaving everything. Nothing, no connection with this world anymore, with anything. Not that, oh, I got sannyasam now, so I nightly build a first class ashram and live comfortably there. Others will do all the work and I will live comfortably. Once in a way I will go out and have a program somewhere, somebody, some rich man's house and come home. This is all not sannyasam. Sannyasam means it's just like total dependence on Krishna. That you have nothing here to possess anything. You are not possessing anything anymore here. All that connections are gone. So, we leave everything and finally you are leaving that person who is leaving. Even that also you have to leave. Is it not? Who is leaving? Ego. Angaram is leaving, isn't it? So up to the, first you have to leave everything. And finally that person who is leaving, you have to leave him as well. Angaram also has to go. That is what Krishna is going to talk about in this chapter. This chapter is very interesting that way. In many places, if you look at it, because it is a final message to the human society, a very highly cultured society can only imbibe all these things in its proper spirit and understanding. And that is why Krishna mentioned in the beginning itself that Varnashrama Dharma means necessary. And only in a society like this, these things will practically work in a perfect way. In a perfect way. So, the underlying principle is that finally, when you leave that person who is leaving everything, then you realize it who you are. What is that? That you are unbroken Atma inside. And like the sky, you completely realize your own identity of the self. That is perfection, and that realized state. And so here is exactly an opposite process in the material life. In material life, what is it? Get everything under control, isn't it? Body should be under control, mind should be under control, and acquiring wealth, property, name, fame, followers, so many things, all under your control, bringing it under control, everything. In spiritual life, throwing out everything away and completely coming back to your identity as the self, as the soul. So totally, you can see completely opposite that is to the material life and the spiritual life. So in the world, in this world, the more we acquire, the more we collect together, you become a big person here in this world, isn't it? In the inside world, the more you have given up and the more you have come out of everything, you become great. You become a Mahatma. This is the principle in there. And these things can never be challenged. These are Rishi's conclusions and they have given it to us. Those who want to take it, they can take it, but principles don't change. That is the underlying principle. Because otherwise this Vedic philosophy, the reason why it has been kept in such a high esteem compared to all other scriptures or shastram in this world is because of its fineness. That it is telling you in this very life itself, if you want to be, they found out this. They were able to find it out that this is the way to perfection, not by nowhere in the world a philosophy has been presented in this way like Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam has presented. So, it is because of this only, in spiritual life, it is always better to sit on the back bench. Better to sit on the back bench. And the more we say, I don't want it, the more you become perfect. Remember, idam na mama. Not for me. I don't want it. The more you say that, the more you become perfect. If you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look at all the famous devotees in the Bhagavatam, you will see they will saying this all the time. Have you noticed that? You remember that na naga prishtam, na japaramestyam, na sarvabhaumam, na rasadibhatyam, na yoga siddhira punarbhavam va. Samanya sattva virahaya kaankshe. Vritrasura says this. He was offered everything. He says, I don't want it. This is his answer to that. Ambarish Maharaj said, I don't want it. Exactly the same thing Ambarish says there in the Bhagavatam. So, all the devotees' prayers, if you look in the Bhagavatam, you will see this. That Krishna is saying here, what the reason is, they know Krishna well than us. Why? Because Krishna is saying here, in the Bhagavatam Krishna says, that I am more frightened of those devotees who tell me I don't want anything. He is frightened of them. Krishna is saying like that. Because he says there, Vashi kurvandi mam bhaktya. They get me and I have to surrender to them. Because they don't want anything from me. It becomes very difficult for me. That's the problem. It becomes very difficult for them. Krishna says, it's difficult for me if I get the devotees like that. And therefore, it is there in the Bhagavatam, you can see, if you look in the 9th canto, you will see there, Vashi kurvandi mam bhaktya. 9466. Shri Bhagwan Vacha is saying here, Ambarish's story this is. Remember, Durvasava Maharshi went to see Mahavishnu in Vaikuntham, and there is this conversation happened. And he says here, 63 verse, Aham Paradina Astodandra Ivadvija Sadhubir Grastha Hrudayo Bhaktir Bhakta Janapriya Naham Almanam Ashase Malbhakte Sadhubir Vina Shriyam Jatyandiyim Brahman Yesham Yadiraham Para Ye Dharagara Putra Aptan Pranan Vittamimam Param Hitwa Mam Sharanam Yada Kadam Tam Tektu Mulsahe Mai Nirbandha Hrudaya Sadhava Samadarshana Vashi Kurvandi Mam Bhaktya Salstriya Salpadim Yatha. That is that verse. Mai Nirbandha Hrudaya Sadhava Samadarshana Sadhava Samadarshana. These devotees who do not ask anything, who don't want anything, they are the problem, Krishna says. Because why? Nirbandha Hrudaya Sadhava Samadarshana. Their vision is very equal in this world. And they capture me, Vashi Kurvandi Mam Bhaktiya, Salstriya Salpadim Yadha. Just like a good wife, she has a control over the husband due to her exemplary nature. That in the same way, Krishna is saying here that I have to follow them. Vashi Kurvandi Mam Bhaktiya, Salstriya Salpadim Yadha. That I have to follow them because I am under their control, he says. So, so as much as we say, I want this, I want this, if we keep saying that, or if these desires are built up inside, then the mind becomes very strong. That's what happens. The mind becomes very, very, very strong. And the more we say, I don't want anything, I don't want anything, we will come to realize a power which is outside this mind. The force of the mind is more forceful when desires are forceful inside. When desires go away, the mind becomes very, very weak. And then you will experience that there is another force inside which is independent of the mind. Independent of the mind. And that force, that power, at the moment the only force what we know is this mind, isn't it? That's the only thing what we know. And if you look inside, it's the mind. So that is why you can see this, that this modern society, if you look at it, it looks very civilized. It looks very civilized. But at the same time, in this civilized society, more people have mental problems. Society is very civilized. It's living well, everything well organized, set up, everything. But the society has the maximum mental problems. You can see it very carefully if you look at people. How their mind is disturbed and how it is easily disturbed if any unhappiness comes in life. That you can observe this very easily in their life. Whereas there are many people who are not so civilized, they're living in the forest, they're not too disturbed about anything in life. Why is that? Whereas you live in this modern society, everything is so organized and structured, and there is no mental hospitals and patients' care as to be, and you're thinking that it's all civilized, isn't it? You're thinking like that. So, more and more we become civilized, more and more mental hospitals will also come into existence. Come into existence. You can see this effect of that. Particularly in the schools also. That's where everything starts, isn't it? So, psychiatry, because being taught now in the schools, because children are crazy. They don't listen to anybody. They don't listen to anybody. I was listening to some of the discussion about this incident, what happened in that school in Leeds. And you start thinking, these are the people, because their argument is that they are saying children are not listening. And sometimes it's interesting, you know, these young graduates who come from the universities and all that, who are high flyers, even studied well and husband, and some of them have taken to teaching profession, and they are trying to teach these children, and they have gone crazy themselves. The teachers have gone crazy. After teaching for a few years, they gave up the profession and gone. They couldn't do it. And if you observe some of the schools, they were showing this, how the children behave there. And so it is a pathetic situation, this is really pathetic, because they are children, and at that age, if they have to behave like this, you start thinking, what is the society? Where is the civilization? Where has it got to? Isn't it? So children are crazy, parents are crazy. They need hospital as well, not only the children. So therefore, all these departments, psychology, psychiatry, psychiatrists, all of them are having a jolly good time, isn't it? And then they have got branches in that, clinical psychiatry, this psychiatry, that psychiatry. And so many new branches are coming up in life. And all these people, the money that is invested, and is there any solution to the problem? No solution. Problem is getting worse day by day, isn't it? So, so now, after that, you look at the psychiatrists who are treating them, they are also crazy. They are also crazy, because they are also pitiable condition, because they have to treat these characters, and it is not easy dealing with these children. Like in the schools today, if you look at some of the programs that BBC produces about this, to tell us that this is the reality in life, this is the reality of life. But I mean, sometimes we used to think this teaching profession was a noble profession. Now nobody wants to go anywhere near to that, because it's so frightening that when you have to handle these children and the way they talk and the way they react to the situations, isn't it? So that is why their situation is also pathetic. That means the psychiatric situation is sad, and the children's situation is sad, the parent's situation is also sad, equally sad. And the whole society is suffering because of this, because of this. That is why Upanishad says, Andhayathandai Upaniyamanam. That means one blind is leading another blind. That's what it is, isn't it? So there is a whole procession of the blind people. And that is what this life is now. That's what the rishis calls it as. So therefore, rishis are telling us that spiritual life is necessary in life. It's not for, it is the truth, and you are not anywhere going closer to the truth. You are tinkering with all your material understanding of the body and the material happiness, and around that you are living this life, and there will be no surprise at all when things happen in this way where it is happening today, isn't it? So what they are saying to us is, this spiritual life, its perfection comes in sannyasam. Adhyatmam is purti. Purti means the perfection of that happens in sannyasam. That is why in Bhagavad Gita commentary, in the very beginning itself, Acharya says there, jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. Without the knowledge of the self, your sannyasam also has no meaning. Sannyasam is not a dress. That's the first thing to know. Or the danda, or the water pot. All these are external things. Sannyasam is that inside perfection. Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. That is why he says there is no meaning for that. And how will you know a person is a sannyasi? In other words, if he has knowledge of the self, irrespective of what clothes he is wearing, he is a sannyasi. If he has knowledge of the self, that is a symptom of sannyasam. Another meaning is, if he is a self-realized soul, what is the symptom of that? Because he is sannyasam then. He is in sannyasam stage. He is in sannyasam stage. That is why that statement, jnanam sannyasa lakshanam, is taken very seriously among the spiritually advanced people. Properly spiritually advanced. They will see a person's knowledge and realization inside. That is the symptom of his sannyasam. Or, in the other way, if you say, if he is a realized soul, he will be a sannyasi, proper sannyasi. Either way, jnanam, sannyasi ashanam. Jnani is a sannyasi, sannyasi is a jnani. Sannyasi is a jnani. So, in other words, jnanam always remain with sannyasam. And sannyasam will always remain with jnanam. So, what is sannyasam means? That's what this chapter is all about. That's what we're going to see. So we'll discuss it after a few minutes. Chedo darpanam arjanam bhavamahadava dinurvavanam shreyakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadho jivanam anandam budivardhanam pratipada purnamana swadanam sarvabna subanam param jayade shri krishna sangirtanam namna magari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatrapida nimida smaranena kalam edadrushi tava kripa bhagavan mamavi durdeiva medashamiha janinanuraga trinara vishuni chenam bhi sahishtuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari nathanam najanam nasundarim kavidam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shari bhavadat bhakti rahai dugitvai ai nanda danu jagingaram padidam amshame bhavambudo kripaya tava pada pangajastida duli sadrasham vichindaya mayanam galada shudharaya padanam gadgadarudhaya punagair nijidam kadavabu tavannam grahane bhavishyadi idam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayidam shunyayidam jagal sarvam govinda virahe name shrishyava padaradam pinashtumam adarshanam marmahadam karotuva yadha tadha va vidada dulamalo matprana nadhastuna evana para. So, the rishis, they are saying to us that the perfection of spiritual life is in sannyasam. Isn't it? Perfection of spiritual life is in sannyasam. So, therefore, that definition also, jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. Two ways. If one is a sannyasi, he has jnanam, knowledge in him, or knowledge of the self, alpa jnanam, knowledge of the self, isn't it? And other way, jnani's symptom is that he is sannyasam, he is in sannyasam. So, jnanam and sannyasam, they are together, they are not separate. And sannyasam means, this is what we are going to see in this chapter, Krishna is going to talk about it. That means the more, the greater you are established in the self, Atmanishta, you are situated in the self, to that extent, everything that is not Atma is given up. The more we are established in the self, in Atma, everything what is not Atma, that will go away from us. Tyajyam. That is, this chapter is about that. What is sannyasam, what is moksham? That's the question, isn't it? Krishna is saying, moksha sannyasa yogam. The title itself is a very strong indication to the topic that is going to be discussed. It's going to be spoken about sannyasam, it's going to be spoken about moksham. That sannyasam state is moksham. That sannyasam state is moksham. And sannyasam is jnanam. Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. And that sannyasam state is the moksham state. And what is that sannyasam? Sannyasam means that, Krishna is going to say this, that the more we become situated in the platform of the self, or identifying with Atma, the more we are established in the self, to that extent, everything that is not Atma will be given up. Tyajyam, tyagam it is called, isn't it? it is in that state Shanti comes. Shanti comes at that stage, and we don't want anything, because Alpajnani, one who has realized the self, he's not even bothered about the world, because he doesn't want this world. He lives in his world, which is a different world. We are concerned about the world. Why? Because we are identifying with the world. Alpajnani, who has come to the platform of the self, he is not bothered about this world, because he knows very well that nothing can be changed. It is inside. He lives in a different world altogether. That is the most important thing. Most important thing. And he knows very well that he does not want this world, and he has nothing to take from this world. He has nothing to take from this world. And he has nothing to become here in this world. But particularly saying here that when you are situated in the platform of the self, and that Shanti or perfection is inside, that externally there is nothing that is going to disturb or affect that situation inside. It's going to. So therefore, that that supreme intelligence, what does that do? That all unnecessary things are in a natural way given up. And that includes this body. The last thing that we give up is this body, and then along with that the ego of the self also. So you can see this, that when Krishna is saying this sannyasam, he is not talking just the dress. He is talking about something different than the dress, isn't it? Dress is all just an external thing. That now, people nowadays very much get attracted by the dress, isn't it? The dress makes everything more important for many people. And you can see their ignorance also about it. Complete ajnanam it is. Avidya is not gone. Dress has changed. What is the use? Avidya is still there. So, that is why he says here that Alpajnani, knowledge, one who has got the knowledge itself, he is not even bothered about this world. He's not bothered. He's gone beyond than all these things, isn't it? And when he is situated perfectly in the platform of the soul and full of Shanti and happiness inside, he doesn't want anything from the world outside. And that supreme intelligence, what does it do? Everything what is unnecessary, it knows very well how to give it up. So, little by little, without the presence, without having any of these things, and he knows that he can carry on. He can carry on like this. So, we are thinking that the more we think that how intelligent we are, you can take it that to that extent you are a slave. The more we think we are intelligent, or we feel pride about our intelligence, you can take it that we are the slaves, because that intelligence is developed in the form of science and technology and the modern way of life, and we keep on buying things and we become a slave of all those things, is it not? So, in the olden days, you can see, if you look back into the history, you will see how sannyasam was followed by people in its perfect way. So, we have not, in the olden days, when they have become sannyasam, they have reached that state of sannyasam, and whichever way they lived in this world, we have not become any way better than that. If you look at it the real way, maybe we are wearing some expensive clothes, or wearing a tie, or driving a car, but inside we are empty compared to them. Inside we are empty. And all what we have qualification is that we are using more and more gadgets and more expensive things in our daily life. We have built our toilets inside the house and we have got tiled it nicely and all fittings, everything looks very beautiful, and we think we have gone better than them. No, we haven't. We haven't got anywhere near to them. So, what we have got now today, what we have got now is that what they have acquired in their life, we can't say we have got more happiness than them. We haven't got it, isn't it? We can't say that we are more healthy than them either. If you look at the happiness level, we are more confused and we are more in distress. than them. To be honest about that. They were happier people than us. They lived in a natural environment with the higher values, and a simple living made them more happy in this world. But on the other hand, we became more distressed and unhappy with our way of life, isn't it? That's one side. On the other side, if you look at the health point of view, you can see we are very unhealthy compared to what they were in those days, isn't it? And you can't even say that we are living longer, although they make kids propaganda all the time, we are living longer. You are living longer, lying in the hospital for years together, being fed and being cleaned and washed and looked after by others. What sort of life is that? And they say they're taking all these statistics and showing to us that you are living longer. This is their argument, isn't it? All you can say is that you are using more materials in life to live in this world, gadgets or equipments or whatever it is. So if buying more gadgets and using them, if you think that is happiness, then there's something wrong seriously about it, isn't it? Because in reality, Krishna is saying, for happiness, you don't require any gadgets or any equipments. Without that, we should be able to be happy inside. That is proper happiness. If some external objects or other personalities are giving me happiness, that means my happiness is dependent on those gadgets, dependent on that other persons. But the moment I experience happiness within me, being due to realization of the Atma, self, in the proper way, if that realization comes, I'm not dependent on anybody else, isn't it? So therefore, what they say is that for spiritual happiness, sense objects are not necessary. And for spiritual happiness, even the body is not required. The body is not required, and or neither the mind. Mind is not required, or the intelligence. So therefore, so what to say for happiness reasons, for purpose of the happiness, that to feel that fulfillment or satisfaction inside, in for that even I am not required. I means the ego is not even required for the happiness reason. Because that is why when they talk about the soul, they say it is bliss. It is bliss. Bliss is Atma. Isn't it? Sukhoyam Atma. It says in the Upanishad. Taittiriyam says that. Sukhoyam Atma. Atma is nothing but happiness. Nothing. So, practically you can see that our definition of happiness is wrong. The way we acquire happiness is wrong. And it's always dependent on external objects. So, that is why Krishna is saying here that even I am not required there for happiness. Happiness exists on its own. It is on its own. So, without me, that means without my ego, without this material world, external world, without the body, without the mind, without the intelligence, without the false ego, without any of these things, and without me itself, that empire of happiness lives in this creation. Empire of happiness carries on. Because in Sushupti, that's what's happening, isn't it? Remember I mentioned this before. How did the rishis find out about sannyasam? From Sushupti. They learned it from Sushupti. In Sushupti, when you say that you have slept well, and in that Sushupti there was no world, external world, there was no body, mind or intelligence, and including the one I am saying, I am enjoying, that personality also has gone in that Sushupti state. Is it not? When I come out of the Sushupti, I'm saying it was a great time, what I experienced in that Sushupti. It is from this that the rishis created this sannyasam. Sannyasam came out from this. Tyagam, giving up. Finally giving up the body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything. When it goes, happiness is there still. And that happiness is rishis called as proper shanti or happiness. Not the happiness what we talk about in this world by getting everything in this world. That's not considered to be happiness. So there, in that Sushupti state, it is the empire of happiness. The empire of happiness. Did I get that happiness by working hard? No, I didn't. Isn't it? When did that happen? When I gave up everything. Not when I acquired everything. When I gave up everything, I got that happiness. You can see this principle when you go to Kumbh Mela and all that. when you see all kinds of people coming there, sannyasis from Himalayas, yogis from Himalayas, they come. You look into their body and their way of life, what do they have in this world? Nothing. Whether they have understood whichever tradition they follow, doesn't matter which tradition they come from. Whichever traditions they come from, you can see that they are able to carry on in this world without getting connected with anything in this world. Is it not? That, and also internally they are growing because they are able to give away the attachment for to the body, to the mind, to the intelligence, and including the ego. So when we gave up everything, happiness came. In a natural way, happiness came. And and as soon as I came back, happiness is gone. Can you see that? When I gave up everything, including the self, I am ego, in other words, when everything was gone, happiness came in. When I came back, my ego came back and started doing everything, kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam, ragam, dvesham, happiness is gone with that. Happiness is gone with that. So, that is to indicate to us that the moment this aham means this ahangaram wakes up inside, happiness goes away. And when ahangaram goes away, happiness comes. These two are connected to each other. When ahangaram goes away, happiness comes in. When ahangaram comes in, happiness goes away. This is the lesson from that. It is based on this. This 18th chapter is built up. This principle. Krishna is going to talk about sannyasam and tyagam in a very intensely in this chapter. Sannyasam, tyagam. And sannyasam and tyagam is nothing but this giving away process of freeing yourself from the bondage of matter. And this we are experiencing every day in Sushupti. So practically sannyasam is happening in the night to all of us every day. Not at the old age, I think we don't get it that much. But when you get the deep sleep, it's an indication that this sannyasam is happening in everybody's life every night when we go into deep sleep state. So Upanishads are saying to us at this point that you have to only look at yourself. You don't have to look into the world. And it is a daily experience that you have to observe. You have to observe. That sukham, happiness, what is experienced in the deep sleep state is Atma. Sukhoyam Atma. That Atma is nothing but Anandam, isn't it? That Satajita Anandam, that Anandam is nothing but Atma. Nothing but Atma. And Atma's nature is happiness. Sukham. Sukham. And Krishna's Rupam is also Sukham. Sachidanandam, is it not? So, therefore, Krishna is not something that you have to work hard and get it. Like in the world, we think everything you have to work hard and get it. Krishna is not something to work hard and get it. Why? Because Krishna is something that always exists. Sat, is it not? Ulla vastu, that means the vastu that exists all the time. Always is there. It's not something that has to come from outside. It's already there. And everything else has to come from outside. But this is one thing, Atma means referring to Krishna. Krishna's presence inside is Antaryami. He is present there all the time, and by working hard you won't get it. Working hard, you won't get it. So, on the other hand, me, that means my false ego, yourself, him, all and this body, all of them belongs to Prakriti. Is it not? My ego, your ego, somebody else's ego, all these and our bodies, these are all belonging to Prakriti. It's not belonging to Krishna. It belongs to Prakriti. Isn't it? Because from Prakriti came all these things. The mind came, from mind, the body came, and all other things manifested outside. But the self inside, Antaryami, Krishna, that is the only reality in all these things. Everything else is the external things. So, Krishna is permanently available. Because Antaryami is always with you. Nitya Siddham, Vastu. Is always available for us. Because there is no time you can exist without Antaryami. Is it not? Antaryami is permanently available, whereas all other rest of the things will come and go. They won't stay. They won't stay. Why? Because all of them belongs to Prakriti. They are not ours. Listen. So therefore we say, Krishna is yours, Prakriti is not yours. Actually what we have got is Krishna, not Prakriti. But we are thinking now, what we have got is Prakriti, not Krishna. This is misunderstanding. What now we have really got, what we have really got it, is Krishna, not Prakriti. Because Antaryami inside is with us. We are with him all the time, isn't it? Whether Jiva or Prakriti, whichever we take it. The moment you leave Prakriti, what do we have then? Krishna is there. Krishna is behind that. So every night in the Sushupti state, Prakriti comes and takes away everything what belongs to her. She takes our body away first. Then we go to dream state. Then she takes our mind away. Then we go into deep sleep. And by then, in deep sleep, she takes away our ego also, the self. So she takes everything away and she only leaves behind Antaryami there, the self. And he is nothing but bliss. Nothing but bliss. And that's what we are actually, not any of these things, what Prakriti takes away from us in the night. In the night. So in the only for the sake of explanation, it is spoken like this, that all these things together, that means the body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and all our senses, and everything what we have acquired in this world, all these things combined together, it's called Prakriti. It's called Prakriti. And that Prakriti is called Avidya. That Prakriti is called Avidya. That Prakriti is called Avidya. So, therefore, because of that Avidya, we didn't know this happiness of the deep sleep state. We didn't know about it, isn't it? And when we wake up in the morning, that, oh, it was a very nice time in that deep sleep state, isn't it? But where did that happiness come from in that deep sleep state, isn't it? That happiness is a nature of the soul. It's Atma's nature. Atma's nature, isn't it? So, those who have, we have now discussed Bhagavad Gita for so many years, isn't it? The second time when we discussed. And often we have repeated this same thing again and again. And you may think why we are repeating this. Why? Because in spite of saying all these things, our connection with the Prakriti is strong. We are unable to break that connection. Still, in spite of knowing these things, knowing very well that in the deep sleep state, when the body has gone, mind has gone, intelligence has gone, ego has gone, everything has gone, and still there was a tremendous happiness in that deep sleep state, as soon as you wake up, you know everything keeps coming back. Prakriti comes back and puts her cover on us in the form of the body and other things. So, but still it is not happening to us. And therefore, we have to keep repeating this till we accept it to some extent inside. So, because if you get a little bit glimpse of this, that is enough. Because the vastu what we are inquiring after, that vastu, in order to experience that, and to somewhere, Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita also, that at least a glimpse of that, if you get it at some point, a slight experience that I am that Atma. If we get that, Patanjali says this in the Yoga Shastram also. He says that that sthanam, that place is the ground. That is the ground, he says. Or Patanjali's words, they use the word as Bhumika. Bhumika is the word. Bhumika means that different levels you are going in your spiritual path. In Jnana Margam, there is so many different Bhumika. Shubhecha, it begins first with that. Suvicharana, Sattvabhakti. Like that, there are 9 Bhumika spoken there in the Jnana Grantham. Bhakti Margam also, there is Bhumika. You know that the different levels, sadhu sangam, anartha nivrti, nishta, asakti, ruchi, like these different levels, these are all called bhumika. Bhumika means it happens one over the other. You come to one level, then you go to the next level, you go to the next level, like that. Whichever yoga margam you talk about, whether it is Patanjali's Yoga Sutram, or it is Jnana Margam, or Bhakti Margam, there is always this bhumika, there. That Bhumika is always there. So, this Patanjali Yoga Sutra will say this a little bit more, explicitly says there, that if you get a little glimpse of that experience of the self inside, then you may get grounded there. You will get grounded there very easily then. Because the reason is, we have not gone that experience now, therefore we are still experimenting with things. But once you have got that experience, he says there, that because you have not reached that Bhumika state, that is why we are wandering around in the world, still inquiring, still investigating, thinking that somebody else is going to give it to me, or it's going to happen to me one day. In so many different conceptions we are living here, isn't it? So, therefore, he uses the word alabdha bhumigatvam. You will see this in the Yoga Sutra in the first few pages itself. So, this alabdha bhumigatvam is a defect in us. That you are not getting there all the time. Years and years and years you are following a process. And nothing is happening in life. Still feeling that, oh, I haven't had any spiritual understanding. I'm not feeling any spiritual experience. I'm not having any realizations. That is called alabdha bhumiyatam. Alabdha bhumiyatam, something what you are not getting. It's getting stuck somewhere. There is something happening in life that you are not able to experience that presence of the self inside, presence of Atma inside. Still feeling identification with the body strongly, still feeling shelter in the body, still feeling shelter in the wealth and society and things like that. This is all an indication of that alabdha bhumiyatam. If you read Yoga Sutram, you will see this. Patanjali discusses this. Alabdha bhumiyatvam. What alabdha bhumiyatvam means? Alabdha bhumiyatvam means that you are not able to experience even a trace of that knowledge of the self inside. You have the knowledge, but you are not experiencing it inside of the self. That till you get a trace of that, Patanjali says, you will keep wandering around in this way. So, where do we have to stay? Where do you have to get grounded? You can't get grounded in the body, can you? Because you know the body will go. So, therefore you don't trust the body. You don't trust this body. Because the body will go one day, isn't it? And mind also you can't trust. You know your own mind. You can't trust the mind. Because this moment you'll have one thought inside. And the very next moment, exactly opposite thing, this mind will come and show it to you. Suppose you are planning to do something, one moment mind will tell you to do it, the very next moment mind will say don't do it. Mind will always play that game, isn't it? So in mind also you can't get grounded because you don't feel secure in the mind. You don't feel secure in the body either. And so therefore you are engaged in meditation. So even while in meditation also, when we say meditation, it includes everything. Say, for example, you're chanting the holy name. That is japa meditation, isn't it? Dhyanam it is. Or the dhyanam of the yogis. Whichever way if you take it. So, as long as you are in that meditation state, you have some security. But the moment you withdraw from that meditation state, it's gone. It's gone. You feel back to the normal again, to this world. You come back here, isn't it? So, even if you absorb all the time in dhyanam or meditation, as soon as you wake up from that meditation, it is gone. So what it indicating to us is, this dhyanam or meditation is only so long as the mind is present there. Because that's where it is happening, isn't it? Meditation is happening in the mind. So, in the mind you are performing the meditation. So, as long as the mind is present inside and the mind is absorbed in the meditation, it will keep you safe. But the moment you come out of the meditation, the mind will immediately go into the world and you will start accepting things from the world. Equally, the body also, you are comfortable with the body at the moment, as long as there is health in the body. Once the health has gone, you will lose the faith in the body straight away. Just like the mind. You lose your faith in the body. You can see many times when people get very, very sick and very, very old, you will see they have no interest whatsoever in the body. You have to come to that stage first. Today, body is doing some things what you want the body to do. So therefore you have some faith in the body. But a day comes when body is not at all cooperating with you in anything. Inside your mind is demanding something, desires are coming, but body is not giving you any kind of cooperation. You will decide at that time, I don't want it. You can go now. I'll be more than happy if you leave me and go. You will say this one day, Krishna will make us to say that. Is it not? It will make us to say, if you leave me and go, I'll be more happy. There's so many people say this at the end. We may also say the same thing at the end. Who knows? So, so important thing is that these things are, you can't get grounded in any of these things. You can't get grounded in the body. You can't get grounded in the mind. You can't get grounded in the intelligence. Nowhere you will feel this settled state. That settlement will only come in that, what Patanjali calls it as, alabdha bhumiyato, where you get grounded only in the self. Only in the self. And that is the only secure place where you will experience that bliss, or shanti, or happiness, what they are talking about. Isn't it? So, so one medical doctor, he, Ayurvedic physicians, he says, while discussing about the medicines, he says, that which is the best medicine? He says, all medicines are good, but a healthy person, when he takes, if he takes a medicine, the medicine will get a good name. If a healthy person takes the medicine, other things we can't say, he said, what will happen? Because if the disease comes, what can be done? What can be done? It has come. And that is why you can see very beautiful people, they will use them for advertisement of the this products, you know, like what do they call the all kinds of things. They won't use ugly people, they'll use only very beautiful, good looking people. They will dress them nicely. They may be thick in their head, but that doesn't matter. As long as they look good, isn't it? They should look good. So similarly, you can see, only healthy people they will use for advertising these tonics. Have you seen the man for Chyawanprash? How it is advertised? When we saw that advertisement for Chyawanprash, we used to think, can anybody be like this? You know, you start thinking like that. Full of muscles there to all sides, so built up muscles and everything. And that's all due to Chyawanprasham, they are saying. But Chyawanprasham didn't make that happen. They got all sorts of advertisement like that. There's some company called Dabur Chyawanprasham. They were doing this advertisement for how many years, I don't know. So many years they have done this for Chyawanprasham advertisement. So similarly, they will use them for. So they may not have even taken that, this photo person whom they have taken the photograph. He may not have even taken Chyawanprasham. He may not have even seen it properly. Probably has not even opened the bottle.
Yeah.
But you can see one thing, that advertisement impact on the people, isn't it? So, therefore, this sukham or happiness or purnada, perfection, is we are inquiring after. We are inquiring after. You can see that. That is why when we see that advertisement of Chyawanprasham, wow, amazing, isn't it? That, if I can become like that, you feel like that in that state, is it not? Body is given. So similarly, that is what we are inquiring after, that perfection inside. We think that body is perfect, isn't it? When you see that body, you think, oh, this is the perfection of the body, full of muscles everybody, nowadays all sorts of advertisements, isn't it? So that is what Krishna is saying here, that sannyasam is that perfection of the Atma, not the body, of the Atma. Just like we are looking for perfection in the body, but we know very well, we are not that intelligent, because we know that even sometimes you can see some of these sportsmen and all, or these big people who are with boxing and all that, if you look at their body and all, it looks very strong, isn't it? But many of them, after getting all the knocks and punches throughout their boxing career, they die very early, is it not? many football players, they die early. They don't live that long because they have abused their body. Body was looking good externally, but it was not the kind of body. Body will never become perfect, but their practice of life and everything has developed in such a way that eventually they leave the body and go, isn't it? But that is all in the bodily level. But what Sannyasam Krishna is talking about here is that we have come out of the body and living in that spiritual health, and you have become so perfect spiritually, and that state is, Krishna calls it as sannyasam. Krishna calls it as sannyasam. That is another word. Sannyasam and moksham, they are not two different things. Sannyasam is with moksham, and moksham is with sannyasam. Do not go by the word sannyasam how it is presented in the world today. In the world, they will tell you a cloth, a saffron cloth, wearing dhoti in a particular way, and a danda in the hand. There is no guarantee that person is going to get liberated. He is not liberated. Krishna's definition in the Shastra is, a sannyasam is moksham state. That is why it's not simple, so simple as we make of it. There's so many millions of sannyasis in this world. That doesn't mean that they are all in moksham state. Are they? They're not in the state of moksham, liberated state, isn't it? So moksham means freedom. Freedom means mukti. Mukti, moksham, all the same words. Mukti means mukti from what? Mukti from, Krishna is saying, janmam, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkham, doshana, darshanam. Have you got freedom from all that? Then you can say you have got moksham. And that state is sannyasam. This fundamental principle, we have to be very clear while studying this chapter. Otherwise it won't make any sense. Suppose somebody reads this 18th chapter and start thinking, oh, all the sannyasis whom I see, they are all reached that state. That will be biggest foolishness. That's not true. That's not true. The truth is this, that if you have got released from birth, death, old, that means you have no more birth, no more death, no more old age, no more disease, from all of them, and no more distress from that. If you have got yourself freed from all that, then you are a sannyasi. Then you have reached the state of moksham. That is why sannyasam and moksham, they are not two different things. That's why Krishna used that title deliberately, moksha sannyasa yoga. Whether you call it as moksham, whether you call it as sannyasam, the state is not different. The state is not different. In other words, Krishna is saying here that as long as I have this material body, as long as I have this material body, our own common sense will tell us, our own common sense will tell us that sannyasi is also dying and going. He is also dying and going away. And the person who is a complete materialist, he is also dying and going. Where is the difference? You will ask that question naturally, isn't it? Sometimes sannyasi is dying in a very hard way. The materialist, somehow he escapes from here without too much trouble. Sometimes he gets a heart attack. And finished. In a few hours, he's gone from here. Or something happened in his life, or accident or whatever it is, dead and gone. Sannyasi, he has been looking after his body very well. And that sannyasi, he's not leaving the body. It takes a long time for him to leave this body. Isn't it? So the question will come that sannyasi is dying, and the materialist is also dying. Isn't it? And healthy person is also getting sick. Healthy person is also getting sick. Sannyasi is also getting sick. So where is the difference? This question will come. And this diseased person, he has got distress in his life. And if you live in this world for some time, you will know that you are in a prison. It only requires some common sense to know that you are in a prison. We are living in a prison, isn't it? Where is the freedom? We haven't got any freedom. Just like you see that you are trying to cross the ocean with a boat which has got a hole in that. The boat has got a hole and you are trying to cross the ocean. And you know, sooner or later that boat will sink. Similarly, this body. Isn't it? This body is like that. With this body you are trying for self-realization. And using this body you want to cross over this ocean of material existence. But this body is like the boat with the hole, is constantly dragging you down. And one day, 60 years, 70 years, whatever it is, this boat gets filled with water and the body is boat is useless then. Boat sinks. Similarly, the body will sink. Isn't it? Body will sink. So, Krishna is saying here that initially you may think about spiritual life that it's all based on the body. But spiritual life is not based on the body. That is why it is important. This knowledge of the self is so important that if you want, as you keep moving further, you will know that this body is not of much of use to us in any level, under any level. And that realization when it comes, Krishna says your spiritual life will go better. We'll discuss it tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Jai Prabhu ki Jai Prabhupada ki Jai